Good evening, everyone. There we are. Oh, we just appeared like magic on the screen. It was great. Welcome to our January 12, 2009 meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin this evening with a moment of silence. Thank you. To lead us in the pledge today, we have Supervisor Bruce Gibson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
In the course of 2+ years in office, that I don't think I had made it to one of your council meetings. And, you know, I talk a lot down there about city and county interactions and wanting to do things differently and make them better. So I thought as, you know, an easily accomplished New Year's resolution, I would try to come about quarterly or more often if you find need and interest in having me here. Just to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on, entertain questions if you have them, and just generally let you know that I'm available for any future discussions. There is, of course, quite a lot going on. We are in a similar situation at the board with a couple of new board members who are settling in, excuse me, very nicely. We are going to be ramping up a huge effort. Our biggest single concern as we head in the next few months is going to be our budget, which, as yours and everybody else's, is seriously impacted by actions or inactions in Sacramento. And we are going to be doing some strategic planning and thinking about how we are going to adjust our ability to provide services to the revenue stream that we expect to get. And we're going to start that at a board strategic planning meeting that's going to be held on the 20th of January. So normally after a three-day weekend, we don't have a board hearing date. But we're going to take these Tuesdays after three-day weekends and other Tuesdays that we normally wouldn't meet and use them to do some thinking. And we have a lot of thinking to do, a lot of planning to do. So the morning of that day is going to be largely devoted to an update on the situation coming out of Sacramento and how it is going to affect the county budget, what sorts of directions our budget staff and other departments are interested in receiving from the board. And then the afternoon is going to be spent largely talking about our planning department's priorities. And they have got a tremendous amount on their plate, as you might imagine, with the downturn in construction. Their revenue stream has shrunk rather dramatically. And so we're in a very difficult but interesting situation of really seeing the need to do a lot of long-term planning for reasons that I think you're well familiar with. And with our resources being constrained. So we're going to go over the list, look at what we think is important, try to, as a board, provide some direction to planning staff. You certainly know that one of the things that's high on our list is the question of strategic growth or smart growth. We've rebranded it strategic growth because it was observed that if one didn't believe in smart with Mayor Peters, Ms. Luker, Janine, and I'm blocking her last name.
Burlingame.
I'm sorry. Mr. Ambo, to start talking about transit in the area. As Mayor Peter sits on SLOCOG with me, and we're looking at resources being constrained for transit. And as I came out to learn a little bit about Morro Bay Transit and the services you provide, the conversation evolved into talking about what we might do in coordinating or maybe even combining transit resources we have in Los Osos as well, bringing in Cayucas as well, trying to see how we can coordinate those transit systems with the RTA buses that go to San Luis. And I think we had a very productive hour plus. I think there's some exciting things we can do to maybe get a more efficient and more effective transit system, more transit, maybe at the same cost or maybe even savings. So we're going to be carrying on that discussion and are very excited about that. The other bit of county business, you will have Mr. Jenny from our County Parks Department and Nick Franco from State Parks talking about other issues, at which point I'll probably have to excuse myself to head to Los Osos to participate in their CSD meeting. But with that, it's a pleasure, again, to be with you and be happy to entertain questions that there might be.
Any questions for Supervisor Gibson? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing you more often. Okay, for our business today, Maggie Arias. Is Maggie here? She didn't make it. Okay. All right, well, if she comes in, somebody wave at me. Okay, other announcements. The Winter Bird Festival is coming up, starts this Friday, and we, as usual, have our family event that we offer to the community at a very low cost. It's Pacific Wildlife Care. They do a wonderful program right here in the Vets Hall this Saturday. Kids are absolutely encouraged to come. You bring your cameras, you get to see a lot of birds, they'll tell you all about them. Showtimes are at 1, 2:30, and 4. Tickets are $2 for adults and $1 for students with ID or children. So it's one of the things that the Bird Festival does to reach out to the community, and we hope that we'll have a lot of people come and enjoy that presentation by Pacific Wildlife Care. Also helps them get their word out with the things they do. I've also been asked to announce that albacore enchiladas will be available on Saturday, January 24th, and Sunday, January 25th. This is the Central Coast Women for Fisheries that are doing this as a fundraiser, and it's $12 for the tickets for your tray of enchiladas, and this is in it, and you don't go fast. So please do take a look. It's very simple. It's very safe if you just abide by the rules. And as you know, they're resurfacing now, so it's going to be finished pretty soon. Some people are still upset because it's still not done, and I understand that. I am too. But when it is finished, it's going to be a real advantage and a very beautiful entry to our city. The landscaping's already in. It's real nice. San Luis Obispo County Environmental Awards. Each year they give environmental awards for environmental achievement of the year, sustained environmental contribution, and environmental initiative. And this is done through the Slo County Community Foundation. I have the nomination forms here, and others are available by calling 543-2323. It's 543-2323. So if you have anybody, organization, business, or person who you feel should be nominated for one of these environmental awards, please either come up and get this or call that number. A couple of pats on the back that I want to do. First of all, we just got a check for $150, was it? Yeah, $150 from some people in Fresno. And I thought it was interesting why they sent the check. In July, my daughter, three grandsons, and I were in Morro Bay for a visit. One grandson got caught up in a riptide. We didn't realize he was in trouble until we saw one of the lifeguards going out to rescue him. It all happened so fast that we never got the lifeguard's name and were never able to give him a proper thank you. Please let him and all of your lifeguards know what a wonderful job they're doing and that their work is very much appreciated. And that was with a donation to the program. So it's a wonderful thing those guys do. Another pat on the back to Rob Frazier of Sun Pacific. We want to thank him for the remote solar-powered vessel high water alarm that he constructed and donated to the Harbor Department to let them know about potential sinking derelict vessels. This alarm goes off, so we're aware that it's in danger of sinking. He did it all himself, invented it and everything. So thank you, Rob. That was really helpful to all of us. Our advisory board appointments are all, where's the date? I lost it. 22nd, yeah. On the 22nd, we close applications for our advisory boards, and please do apply for some of them. We have openings on all of them, actually. Harbor Advisory Board, Public Works, Planning Commission, Recreation and Parks, and Promotions Committee. This is from the mayor's meeting. These meetings are getting really depressing to go to. Bruce was at this one, too, so he knows. But just so you know, the League of California Cities representative is there and always gives us an update on what's happening or not happening, as the case may be in Sacramento. State budget is approximately $100 billion, and $40 billion of that right now is deficit. So that's 40%. It's not looking good. The prognosis is the budget years for 9-10 are bad, 10-11 are worse, 11-12 flat, and 12 and 13, hopefully there'll be some slow improvement happening. Some of the things that are being talked about are they may trade a sales tax increase for reduced CEQA and prevailing wage requirements, potential takeaway targets or homeowners exemptions and Prop 42 funds. And as soon as something gets settled, Dave Molinax is going to come to one of our meetings and give us an update on what the league is doing in response to whatever the state ends up doing. So I wish I could be more cheery on that one. So hopefully the rest of you have cheerier announcements. Betty, anything?
The Water Resource Advisory Committee met last week, and the two major items that we spoke about were the Resources Management System report that comes out annually and is referred to the Board of Supervisors. And in there, they give an evaluation of our water and wastewater, as well as schools and road situation. We all saw the road situation in the paper last week. The second thing that we discussed is our conservation element for the county is under review right now, and there's been a couple of meetings inland, not one here on the coast, but if anyone's interested in knowing more about the conservation element for the county, how it interfaces with us, I'd be glad to talk with you, or you could call county planning.
Rick?
Well, I've got some wonderful news.
Good.
Up on the board here, we have, it's tax time, as you know, it's starting to get there quicker than we can realize. It's free income tax assistance, and I can't read it from here, but I think the cap is $42,000,
yeah.
Is that right? So Morro Bay residents, if you make $42,000 or less, the EOC, along with other sponsors, will take care of your tax preparation at no cost. So that number is 549-8989 for Morro Bay residents. Ask for extension 211 to make an appointment to have your taxes done. And these are done by real tax people, not just volunteers. So you'll get an accurate tax return. Cholesterol and colorectal cancer at no cost. So nutritional counseling and referrals if needed. If you have questions about your medication, combinations of medications, they're qualified and prepared to talk you to do the right thing. So that's always the last Monday of the month, and this month it'll be the 26th, and that'll be the Senior Center at the Community Center.
Thank you. Okay. Noah?
I just did want to highlight again the advisory board opportunities that are there. I certainly had an excellent time on the Public Works Advisory Board, and I think it's a great opportunity for any of us to get involved, and it is a vital resource for our council and staff to have input from the public in an organized manner. So, again, as Janice pointed out, the interviews or the applications due on the 22nd. You can pick those up at City Hall, and the interviews will be on the 28th in the evening at 6 p.m. I also did want to talk briefly about our rainy season and the water situation that we're looking at for the upcoming year. It's obviously not turning out to be a very wet year for us, so we need to do everything we can to preserve and conserve the water that's available to us. And there will be future opportunities that are being worked on right now to learn more about what we can do in our own homes, because it's a responsibility of all of us. So one that I think is particularly interesting is the Estero Bay Garden Club has organized a presentation from Slow Green Build that's going to be at Dorn's Restaurant on the 28th. In the morning, and that the Garden Club will be meeting in the morning doing their normal business, and at 1 p.m. at Dorn's on the 28th, there'll be a presentation about water resources and recycling opportunities that the average homeowner can incorporate. And I think it's safe to say Nancy Johnson would be a good contact if you would like more information about that. So that's all I had.
Thank you. Carla?
Thank you. I also get to share some good news about our expanded library hours at the Morro Bay Library. They are now open an hour earlier and have one more late evening, so hopefully everybody will stop by. The hours on Tuesday through Saturday are now 10 a.m. instead of 11, and on Tuesday and Wednesday they're there till 7 o'clock. Thursday and Friday till 5, and on Saturday till 4 o'clock. So,
long-range strategies for the city to consider for overall improved financial health. We've made some progress on these strategies, and I'll just briefly touch on those, and I'll call them by number. Recommendation 1 really is an ongoing strategy, and it was lobbying the Coastal Commission for return of our general plan, and we're working towards that with letters and touching base with them. Recommendation 2 was to hold an annual policy meeting to develop goals, and the city held our annual meeting last June of 2008 to set up
goals for the city for the upcoming year. We will follow that up this February 2009. I believe the 17th and the 18th, we'll be having our second goal-setting meeting to conform with that recommendation from management partners. Recommendation number three is really ongoing, and it's incorporating the determined goals into our budget direction and our guide for program development. That's an ongoing goal that we're working on. Recommendation four was fairly significant. It was some consolidation and some combining of positions, I guess, is the best way to put it. And as you'll recall, in August, the City Council approved elimination of the assistant city manager position. They also approved combining two maintenance positions, the park maintenance and the facility maintenance superintendent, to one maintenance superintendent. We reduced an account clerk full-time to half-time. And not so much consolidating, but in terms of efficiency, we moved some people around. We were happy to move Rob Schultz, the city attorney, to City Hall, and we moved Janine Burlingame from City Hall to the Public Services Department. We are also in progress with Recommendation 6, which was updating our cost allocation study, and we should get some firm numbers from that in the near future. We are also expecting to receive some final numbers from our request for a proposal from CAL FIRE. We were hoping for January. It looks like early February for those numbers for our CAL FIRE to possibly operate our fire program. We had recommendation number 25 to increase the encroachment fees, and we did increase those fees last August. We're also going to be bringing back to you, in terms of recommendation 17, study on the 2008 trolley expense and revenues. The recommendation from management partners was to eliminate the general fund support of the trolley, and we'll be bringing back to you in March the numbers for 2008 and how we did there for further movement from the council. Recommendation 24, increase harbor fees and looking at parking fees in the Tidelands launch ramp area. Again, that's going to the Harbor Advisory Board, and we'll be bringing that to you in March of 2 months. Two issues before you tonight, which were directly from the management partners study. Recommendation 37 was development and implement a redevelopment agency. And before you this evening, as you know, is authorization of a feasibility study for the redevelopment agency. Also, recommendations 30, 31, and 34, which individually address increasing transient occupancy tax, implementing a utility user tax, and establishing a 9/11 fee. As evidenced by the staff report on the feasibility study and those three revenue measures, staff strongly encourages the City Council to move forward on those issues pursuant to the management partners report. I think in conclusion, it's fairly easy to say that we've made some real significant progress with the recommendations from the management partners report, but I think it's extremely important that we understand that in order to continue to be a vital community, we have to continue to move forward both with revenues and with cost-cutting measures.
Okay, thank you. Did Maggie Arias get here? No? Okay. Then closed session report.
Yes, good evening. Prior to the regular session, council went in closed session to discuss real property transactions. The three properties were 625 Harbor Street, lease site 9696W, also known as the Whale's Tail, and lease site 65W, which is the Salt Building. On all three of these properties, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
And Rob, while you're up, can you tell us where we stand on the appraisal on Brannigan's property? Is that coming to us?
It's currently ongoing. We've had some questions from the appraiser on square footage sizes and other issues that have come up over the holidays, and we're supposed to get that in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll bring it to you first in closed session for direction.
Okay, thank you. All right, we will go to our public comment. Please come up to the podium and address your comments to us and keep them to 3 minutes or less.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, and city staff. My name is Ani Lin. I work, live, and play in Morro Bay. I'm here tonight representing the nonprofit, the Morro Bay Harbor Festival, Inc., that puts on our Harbor Festival and our Music Festival. The 28th Annual Morro Bay Harbor Festival Poster Contest is here. Our festival will be October 34th this year. The theme for the 2009 festival is Uptown, Downtown, and Sailing Around, showcasing all three communities here in Morro Bay. Entries must be received no later than March 2nd, 2009. Special recognition will be awarded to the artist whose entry is selected as the official 2009 Harbor Festival poster, including an invitation to the 2009 media event, a photo and feature in the 2009 media kit, a press release showcasing your achievement, and more recognition wherever possible on Harbor Festival merchandise, apparel, and printed material. For more information, you can go to our website, www.m, as in Morrow, b, as in bay, h, as in harbor, and f, as in festival.com. Right at the top of the page, you'll see the information, and there's a download where you can go ahead and apply. You don't have to be an artist who sold your artwork. All of us have an artist inside of us, so everybody can try to do this. Also, I want to show you just briefly, and I do have this in all the motels in Morro Bay, Los Osos, and Cayucas, our new music festival and Harbor Festival brochure. It's also going to be around town in as many places as I can put it out, and we have mailed it out of the country to 5 different countries, 20 chambers within those countries. It will be in the chamber in San Francisco. It's gone to chambers on the East Coast, Midwest, Arizona, New Mexico, Ventura, Santa Ana. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm Johnny Biagini, and I'm here tonight on behalf of the lodging community in Morro Bay. We are putting together a plan, a proposal with it, when it's successful, will increase revenues not only in transient occupancy tax but in sales taxes, and that is to establish a business improvement district. And we have requested to be on the January 26th City Council agenda to present that concept to you, and because of that, we are asking you tonight to not do anything with regards to the transient occupancy tax rate increase until you've had an opportunity to hear the BID, what the proposal is, and what the benefits are for Morro Bay. So we ask you tonight to not do anything. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Joan Solu, and I'm here tonight to speak to you regarding D6, specifically the transient occupancy tax portion of your discussion. As you're aware, Morro Bay's motels and hotels are in the process of asking you to fast-track the formation of a citywide BID. The Morro Bay Business Improvement District Formation Committee has been working with city staff to provide them with the necessary forms and documents to move forward with a BID. At this time, we are hopeful that the Morro Bay BID will have a secure spot on the agenda for the next City Council meeting on January 26, 2009. In the past 4 days, we have secured signatures from approximately 70% of the owners or representatives of our city's approximately 900 rooms, showing their direct support for a business improvement district. We on the Formation Committee are hopeful that you will listen to our voice prior to making any decisions at all regarding transient occupancy tax. In other words, let me ask you on behalf of the majority of hotel and motel owners in Morro Bay to give us a chance to make our business improvement district presentation to you before you make a decision about transient occupancy tax. On a personal note, oftentimes I have watched your meetings and your debates, and at some point each of you have said that you support business, or that you are pro-business, or that you're pro-sustainable clean business, or perhaps you've stated that you were in business or that you currently own a business. Well, guess what? I heard you. I listened intently to what you were saying, and now I'm here to ask you to actually support business, specifically the hotel and motel business in this city. 70% support of a Morro Bay BID in 4 days is not an accident. 70% support is business in this community taking the economic bull by the horns and wrestling it to the ground. We are pleased to be working with you, the city manager, and the city attorney toward the goal of a formation of a business improvement district. We are ready to step forward united as business owners to promote our wonderful city Thank you very much for your time. I have a 7 o'clock PTA meeting at my house. I'll watch you from there.
Thank you.
My name is Barb Strassel. I'm
owner of Coffee. Pull the microphone down a little bit
so we can hear you better.
There you go.
My name is Barb Strassel. I'm a business owner on the waterfront. I'm just not as eloquent as my friend Joni, but I'll do my best. I'm here to sound the alarm. My husband and I own 3 businesses on the waterfront in Morro Bay, the oldest being California Images. Next came Poppy. And finally, in 2007, we gave birth to Somia. We are proud to be an integral part of the city by contributing rent, percentage rent, attracting tourists and locals to the waterfront, employing local people, and last but not least, paying taxes. Over 2008 and into 2009, sales have dropped around 30%, a figure which is echoed by retailers throughout the city, county, state, and beyond. The recession has not only arrived but been a part of our reality for the last year. on more than one occasion, I've approached my leaseholder, my landlord, about reducing my rent. His options given to me were have rent for 3 months, no rent for 3 months, pay me back in the summer. A second option was to loan me $15,000. My rent is $5,000 on the one space, to which had to be paid back within a year at 5%. Both of those offers to me didn't mean anything because already being in debt over the last year, that seemed like a bad deal to me. And especially not knowing what the economic future brings to Morro Bay. And it gave me a big headache, I said. Okay, so the third option was to reduce my space rent so that I would pay a percentage of the rent that I'm paying now. He came back and refused that after it was offered. He recanted it because he said, oh my gosh, how am I going to rent that space? Yeah, duh. Who's going to rent this space? Nobody. Especially in this economic downturn. I believe there's about a dozen spaces that are available right now down on the Embarcadero that aren't rented, and I'm guessing that there's going to be more to come. I'm here to make a plea to the city, and I'm not sure what your powers are, and I'm not exactly sure how the whole system works in terms of rents that the city collects from the leaseholders, but I'm begging for some financial relief in the form of rent reductions to the leaseholders that I was praying might be passed on to the renters. Morro Bay is a destination for tourists from afar as well as visitors in and around the county. Oh my, I'm over. I went over, but.
It's okay, if you can just wrap up.
Yeah. Okay, I just list all the things. People come to Morro Bay. They stay in a campground in a hotel. They go out to dinner. They go shopping. They play golf. They go to the beach. They eat again. They shop some more. They go to Albertsons.
Conclude.
Anyway, my plea is about, I guess that's all I have to say.
So you're looking for rent relief.
I'm thinking that small business means something not only to the community, but to all the people that we employ and the greater good.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council, City staff, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bill Carlson. I'm more or less a Morro Bay resident. I live at the Rancho Colina Mobile Home Park, which keeps me from voting for you folks, but I still feel like I'm a Morro Bay resident. I'm here representing a newly formed group called Central Coast United for Change. Ours is a nonpartisan group that wants to keep the spirit of positive change alive after the election of Senator Barack Obama. Our focus is twofold: providing community service and supporting progressive solutions to local, state, and national issues. Based on President-elect Obama's call for community action before the inauguration. Our first community service activity is to conduct a food drive for the San Luis Obispo Food Bank. After the holidays, the food bank stores are very low, as I'm sure everyone is aware of, but the need continues. Local food pantries, be they religious or community service, rely heavily on the food bank to provide them with food stores so that they can in turn serve the needy of our communities. This weekend, on Saturday, January 17th, we are going to be doing some door-to-door talking to neighbors in Morro Bay to see if there's any way they might be able to help out by providing with non-perishable foodstuffs that we in turn can come around on Monday, Martin Luther King's birthday, to pick up and then have them delivered to the food bank. If people also would like to donate to, may hear about this through this particular venue, they can bring bags of food to the parking lot of St. Timothy's Catholic Church on the 19th, which is Monday, from 9 to 2 p.m. And we'd be very glad to take that. We hope this is going to be a successful effort because we know that the need is great. In future, we hope that we can be a positive factor in Morro Bay and also throughout the county of San Luis Obispo. This food drive is going to be going on in each of the communities throughout the county on Saturday. And as I said, we'll do the pickups on the 19th. If anyone is interested in helping out, they can give me a call. Again, my name is Bill Carlson. My phone number is 772-5938, and I'd be glad to get you going. So thank you very much for listening to me, and have a great year.
Thank you. Good luck with that.
Good evening. My name is Joyce Lundy, and I'm here tonight representing the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center. And I'm going to give you some statistics from the Visitor Center so you can see what we've been doing lately. And I also have a report on a couple of very exciting upcoming events. We welcomed in December, in person, 641 people. Our phone calls were 857. Business referrals were 1,810. Our website hits 642,073. Our web page views were 73,597, and our website sessions were 18,074. On Thursday the 15th, we have our mixer at Dr. Tiffany Smart's office. That's at 590 Harbor. We're going to do a ribbon cutting at 5, and the mixer will start at 5:30, so please come and welcome our new member. And then on January the 24th, we have our annual installation dinner. We will be installing our new board of directors and our new president, who is Andrea Klipfel. It's going to be at Chow Bella. We're going to have a president's reception at 5:30. We have limited seating, and we're already taking reservations. We're going to have raffle tickets available. You can call in your reservations. You can also apply for some raffle tickets. This event is so exciting because we will choose our Business of the Year, our Citizen of the Year, and Morro Bay's Living Treasure. You want to call in right away. We have limited seating, and we are already taking reservations. Call the Chamber at 772-4467. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor. Council, first of all, Happy New Year. Glad to see you all seated, and city staff. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay, friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. A week ago, on the 5th, the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department, in concert with the George Hoag Family Foundation and the Morro Bay Chamber, Morro Bay Rotary Club, who helped us with a donation when the Prius sales, We were able to give the Morro Bay Fire Department $70,000, and for us that was a big deal, toward the new Rescue 2 vehicle. And the Rescue 2 vehicle is pretty important for not just Morro Bay, but the northern county, because this will carry the things we usually had in the trailer will all be on this new vehicle. And that will be the jaws of life and confined space and other things for disasters, plus some sort of light setup. The chief could tell you more about it, and a generator. But so it's really important for us to have this. And I was totally excited to be a part of this. And we really have to give a lot of thanks to George Hogue and their family foundation. He was there, and it was wonderful. So I just want everyone in the community to know that we've got a Rescue 2 coming. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Mayor, Honorable Council, my name is Bill Woodson. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. And tonight I am representing Morro Bay Beautiful for two reasons. Number one is Morro Bay Beautiful, in conjunction with the city, has the Adopt a Tree program. And as you can see, the Morro Bay 4-H Club, thank you, Councilperson Carla, appreciate it. I stole this from your tree today. These are up on the existing trees, 14 trees that we've already adopted. And the city is keeping their share of the bargain, and I'm looking for volunteers to adopt a tree. It doesn't cost a thing. It just takes a little bit of time and a little bit of water, and we're asking you to water new trees, newly planted trees, for once every couple weeks for the two seasons to get them established. And if you want to know more information, call this number. That happens to be my number, 772-0494. The second thing is Morro Bay Beautiful as well. And there is a long-standing tradition. Morro Bay Beautiful provides city vehicles license plate holders. So the fire department got a new vehicle, and the fire and the police department got a couple new vehicles. So we're happy to provide Morro Bay Beautiful license plate holders for them. And so we thought we would start a new tradition as well and extend this idea to the two new council members. So here we are.
Does it come with a car?
While I've got the podium, anyone out there that wants these license plate holders can buy them, 20 bucks a set, which is two, or 10 bucks for one. You can get them at Henson's Chamber and at the aquarium as well. So it's a rumor. It's not a fact, but it is a rumor. If you have these on your car and you run a stop sign, you might skate. So, thank you.
Thank you.
They got to catch you first. Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, staff. My name is John Barta. You know, I can't even begin to guess how many times I've walked through the door to this building, and I know all of you have done the same thing. What's the name of this building? The Veterans Memorial Building. You know, they got a building with the same name in Cambria and the same name in Cayucos and the same name in San Luis and a whole bunch of other communities around here. Why do they all have the same name? They all have the same name because a long time ago, when there was a financial crisis in this country, the federal government decided to spend money in its communities to build up their infrastructure. And if you haven't noticed, and I have, we're currently in a financial crisis right now of proportions that go beyond any of our lifetimes. Probably there's very few people that live through the Great Depression. And these are some quotes from the president-elect. I don't believe it's too late to change course, but if we don't take dramatic action as soon as possible, if nothing is done, this recession could last for years, linger for years. If the members of Congress have any good ideas, if they identify a project for me that will create jobs in an efficient way that does not hamper our ability over the long term to control our deficit, that is good for the economy, then I'm going to accept it. Shovel ready. How many times have we heard that in the news? Okay, so my question is this. It's been 2 months since the election. We've been in a financial crisis for 3 months. How many projects have we sent to lowest caps to say that we are shovel ready to get some of this federal money? They're going to pass out $300 billion. That's $300,000 million. One lonely million of that would help a lot in our town. So I've made a list here of projects that you might want to think about: our sewer plant upgrade, street repair, harbor office building, Coast Guard office building, bridge over Morrow Creek, State Park Marina, wires underground at Main Street, fire barracks, swimming pool, etc. We should be doing this. If we're not, please get our butts in gear. Thank you.
Thank you.
I told you I'd be back, because I do care about Morro Bay and I care about the environment. At one of the last city council meetings,
we need your name.
Melody Demerit, private resident, and anyway, and member of Morro Bay Beautiful, so they might be interested to hear about this too. There's a poster in the lobby of this building that talks about the San Luis Obispo County Creek Day. And this council, when I was on it, was presented a staff report from the city manager that said that our staff had looked at the creeks and said they didn't need to be cleaned up. So I figure, like all good councils, you'll need some evidence of the fact that it needed cleaning. Over the Christmas break, I got the good fortune to have a lot of time to walk, and I like walking that bike path that goes over Little Morrow Creek. I just looked over the side and I said, God, why didn't we clean up this creek? Now, this is something that doesn't take any city money. All it takes is community activity. Morro Bay Beautiful might even coordinate it for the city as the sign up. But it's a disgrace to go out in the lobby and to find out we didn't sign up, but other cities did, like Atascadero, where I did my first cleanup back in the 70s. This is what the creeks have in them. These are creeks that flow directly into the ocean in Morro Bay, by the way. The dreaded plastic bag. These things destroy sea life, foul up water, wastewater systems. They should be outlawed outright, but they aren't. Styrofoam cups, you should make an ordinance to get rid of styrofoam cups in Morro Bay. These never break down. They are not recyclable. It is from, I don't know if it is from Taco Bell, but a lot of the trash that my friend and I found down there was from Taco Bell. We spent 1 hour in the creek bed picking up plastics and styrofoams. In fact, this one kind of odd thing here your staff might know is a sandbag found in the middle of the creek bed, disintegrating, stuck under roots, stuck up under trees. These are plastic bags that house sand. I don't know how they got down there behind, well, somewhere where there's no roadway. I don't know. Nobody would carry one of these things down there. But what I would suggest is that it's easy enough for you to agendize a discussion that you would just create a resolution that says a council resolution that you want to participate in the county creek cleanup every single year. And it won't be dependent on the staff looking at the creeks or the city manager making her own assessment, but the fact that, hey, we're humans, there's trash in the creeks, and hey, we're a community, we can pick it up.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Tammy Haas. I'm a Morro Bay resident. I'm here this evening to announce that the Morro Bay Grange will be holding a reorganizing meeting to reestablish the Morro Bay Grange membership. The Morro Bay Grange has been around since the early 1900s, And the Grange is an organization with special interests in agriculture, developing leadership, community service. It is also a great place for groups to hold meetings and other community functions. The mission statement of the Grange is to provide opportunities for individuals and families to develop to their highest potential in order to build stronger communities, states, as well as a stronger nation. The Grange will accomplish these missions through fellowship, service, and legislation. You can also visit the National Grange website at nationalgrange.org for more information. And I'm encouraging the community members interested in joining the Grange to attend the next meeting, which will be Thursday, January 29th, 6:30 p.m. And the Grange Hall is located on east on Highway 41, approximately two miles. And also, I'm going to plug Del Mar PTA Art Auction and Barbecue. We're currently looking for donations for our art auction, goods and services, any art. The barbecue and art auction is going to be Sunday, March 29th, between 1 and 4 p.m. at Del Mar Elementary. And if you are interested in donating an item, you can reach the Del Mar Elementary office at 771-1858. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council. I'm Steve Seamus from 11 Rennell and Beachcomber Drive in Morro Bay. Just wanted to bring to your attention an increasing problem we have on Beachcomber Drive above the Tascadero State Beach Campground. It's becoming an overnight camping for fifth wheels and motorhomes. And I realize we have no overnight camping ordinance, but it's not enforced. And I would like to see if we could work something out where we either have a 7-foot height limit and no overnight camping signs put on Beachcomber Drive, because it becomes more increasingly worse each and every year. Some are very nice when you approach them and explain to them the situation. Others are just defiant and won't move, but it's getting worse and worse each year. So I very much like to see if there's some way we can work and get some signs posted. And anything we can do to help, we'd be happy to. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, friends at home, Joey Ricano. I'm with the California Ocean Outfall Group, as you know. I can't tell you how proud I am tonight to be here speaking before Noah Smuckler and Carla Borchard. It's great to see you guys up there. I have so much hope for this community now. It's a lot different than the first time that I came. But I'll tell you, Sandra and I just did 16 states in a few months. And one thing that hasn't changed is how spectacularly beautiful this place is. When I got back here, I mean, we saw some beautiful places in Texas. We went to South Florida. We were in the snow in Arizona. The dogs got to see the snow for the first time. It was really fun. But I'll tell you something. There is something that staggers you when you look at this estuary. It's the same thing that I always talked about, the sun gleaming off the water. What you have here is something so special, so unique. And I don't mean so unique. I mean unique. And you know what unique means? It means it exists nowhere else. So you don't really need heavy industry and things like that. You have something that stands on its own. So don't ever think that you don't have what it takes to make money, Morro Bay. As an RVer, I would address my colleagues' concerns by saying that Morro Bay needs to find a way to address those concerns and at the same time be RV-friendly, because I know that when we go places, we spend money in those communities. And so you want to have some type of a way for RVers to come in here and enjoy this beauty and spend their money. I mean, it makes the world go round, right? Finally, and in conclusion, I would like to say that there have been concerns among activists and activist groups about the Morro Bay sewage waiver, the 301H waiver, that for the longest time allowed Morro Bay to flout the Clean Water Act. Well, there have been rumors that the waiver has been reinstated, but the truth of the matter is that despite the best or worst intentions of some of the people in this local government, the truth is that the Regional Water Quality Control Board heard the call of the people for tertiary treatment. You've got 5 years to dump sewage, but you'll never get another waiver. And in return, you are locked into tertiary treatment. You are locked into a shorter time frame to come into compliance with full tertiary treatment, full secondary treatment, and you're going to go further. So things are looking up. And when people tell you, oh, the sewage, there's no connection between the otters and the sewage. Well, there's no connection between the sun and my tan, but we all know better. So all I would say is that you elected these leaders to lead, and I really implore you to follow their lead, because we've got great people up there now. We can get it all done. And I thank you for this opportunity to address you today.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I forgot two things myself. First of all, the business forum that meets on Thursday mornings at the Embarcadero Grill is going to have a presentation by the Buxton Company. They made a presentation here earlier, and they're going to make this one to the business community. So if you are a business person and you're watching this, please do try and attend that. It's at 9 o'clock this Thursday morning. This is something we're considering as a way to increase revenue in Morro Bay, and we would like the business community to be informed about it. The other thing I forgot is the Fundraiser Follies. We're having auditions for the second annual Fundraiser Follies this coming Monday, the 19th, at the Community Center at 5 o'clock. And if you don't have an act to perform, then come anyway. We'll find something for you to do. This is to get the whole community involved, have a lot of fun, and raise money to support our local events. So I'm hoping that we'll see a lot of people there. If you can't make it, call me and let me know, and we'll set up another time. But we do want to include as many people as possible. And with that, any other comments? Rick?
Regarding Melody's comments on the cleanup of that area. I serve on the Warden's Advisory Board at the prison, and they're always looking for things like this to do, and brush cleanup and cleanup of creeks and things like this is what they do. So I'd like to suggest that staff contact the community guy in charge of community service there and get them on a schedule to keep that, identify the area of need and let them know and get on their schedule.
Okay. Anyone else? All right, we'll take a short break and then we'll proceed with our meeting. Thank you. Okay, we're back. There was a comment in public comment that Bruce Ambo wanted to give some response to about what we're doing about requesting funding from the federal government.
Thank you for this opportunity to kind of clear things up for any misunderstandings that any folks may have. We have a very long list and have for a very long time of all the capital improvement projects and have sorted them out in shovel-ready status. And furthermore, our finance director, Susan, I believe, is going to a conference tomorrow to find out the specifics of what is necessary to use, what kind of conditions there are for shovel-ready projects and how we can get funding, because we want to be actively involved in that. So that's something we've done. We responded to the first volley of these requests at least 2 months ago when these were initially surfaced, and they started out with transit projects. We've got a real articulate list of all kinds of infrastructure, water and sewer collection things. We've got a treatment plant. We've got a back bay that needs to be dredged. We've got a number of things that are well documented and what we would consider shovel ready. But we'd be happy to give you an update or something later on. Susan will know more about what the conditions are with the funding and what the status of that is. And lastly, on the creek maintenance, we have, as you know, a very aggressive creek maintenance program. And we actually send bills out to folks to kind of assess them for creek maintenance. That's what we're doing now, or have been earlier. And we do use the inmate work crews quite frequently. And that's part of the cost of the program. But, we have a pretty extensive list of wish list, if you will, of projects that we believe are ready to go.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure Susan will find that. I think they define shovel ready as 120 days to get everything in order, and then 160 days to put a shovel in the ground or something like that.
We're there. Yeah. I'd like to say we can almost spend anything they can give us.
I'm sure we can. Okay. All right. We're going to go with item D1, and we have a state park presentation. Sorry, I'm looking for my notes.
Yeah. Good evening, Mayor Peters and members of the council. Actually, we're going to have a state parks and county parks presentation. Okay. I'm Pete Janney. I'm the deputy director for parks for the county of San Luis Obispo. And also here tonight is Nick Franco, the superintendent for the San Luis Obispo Coast District, which he'll explain. He'll share his piece, and I'll share my piece. Come to talk to you a little bit about this arrangement between the county and the state and what it means for the community. And I found that having talked to people about this a number of times, it's helpful to provide a little bit of background. There is a little touch of history. I can make that pretty brief, kind of let you know where we are, and then really there's an awful lot of question and answer. So I'll try to make my comments brief, and I know Nick has some as well. This really goes back more than six decades. The relationship between the county and the state having operating agreements for state-owned facilities that are managed by the County of San Luis Obispo. Probably the most well-known one is Morro Bay Golf Course. County staff has been operating the golf course since the late 40s. Other facilities have been added along the way. In Cayucas Beach, the so-called Atascadero State Beach, or Cayucas Beach, is state-owned facility, owned by them but managed by us since at least 1950. The Vets Hall, the pier, all those facilities. In more recent years, we've added the top of Bishop Peak. There's actually a piece of the very top of the peak that is owned by the state, and we actually manage it cooperatively with the city of San Luis Obispo. So all of these facilities have been tied up in operating agreements going back a long time. The current agreement, which is hoped to be a 20-year agreement, was entered into just about the year 2000. And one of the conditions that was placed in that, because of a long-standing wish of state parks, has to do with Pecho Road and Montaña de Oro. Now, MDO is not one of the facilities we've managed. We have never been involved in managing it. It's strictly a state facility. But as many of you may know, Pecho Road, which runs deep into the park, is owned by the County of San Luis Obispo. And because of that, State Parks has never been in a position to establish a fee station and an entry kiosk to charge fees to get into the park. And that's long been an issue for them. As a park professional, I can understand the frustration of having a very expensive operation, and Nick will speak to just how expensive, that lacks that revenue stream of a daily entry fee, which is, frankly, is very, very all but standard in the industry these days. So when it came to negotiations, and leverage being what it was, and the desire to continue this, State Parks was able to include in the year 2000 agreement, the current version that we're dealing with now, a provision. And actually, this was a bit of a fallback position. They wanted to begin in the year 2000 the ability to charge fees. We were able to get some concessions and held that out for 10 years, but we are in a position now, we the county, that we must make a decision to do one of three things. Number one, allow state parks to begin a fee collection system at the entrance to the park or wherever they would put up a kiosk. Secondly, the other option would be we would pay them not to do that. And the amount of money that was determined in 1999 when this was being negotiated in the year 2000 was $40,000 a year adjusted for inflation. So that number is up to about $54,000 today and would keep growing each year. So that's the second option. Pay them not to do that. And this would be coming from an unknown source of revenue somewhere from the county paid to the state each year. The third option is to walk away from the agreement. Now, I will share with you that no one we have talked to, neither state park staff, county staff, anybody in the community that we've talked about this issue, has supported that third option. Everybody has recognized that this relationship of the local management and therefore a lot much more accessibility to the community and much more in touch with the community, with all deference to state employees, has worked effectively for six decades or more. So it really has come down to a choice between allowing them to operate a fee program or the county paying them. Those are the three options that our board is faced with, though. We will likely have a hearing. We tried to get this on the board's agenda late in 2008, and as I think you're aware, our board agendas were extraordinarily impacted during the last couple of months. There were lots of things that were that crowded this issue out. We did not get it on their agenda. We anticipate within the next month or two, though, taking it to the board for a decision, because whatever decision they would make would become effective in the 10th year of the contract, which is the year 2010, just about the end of January of 2010. So that's the bare bones of the situation. I know Nick may want to share some thoughts as well.
Sure. So one of the main things, obviously, is what does that mean from a state parks perspective, and how would that be implemented, and what does that actually look like? So clearly, if the option is to walk away, it's ugly for everybody, and we really haven't gone down that road on what that would look like, because that is really ugly. And I don't think anybody wants that, so we certainly don't want that. If it's the payment of just that money, that $53,000-ish a year, then things just stay the same, and that's just money that comes in as revenue to the state park system. If the option is selected to charge a day use fee, so to actually implement a fee structure, then what that would look like is a $5 per vehicle fee. So it's a vehicle fee, it's not a per person fee. So if you walk into the park, you bike into the park or whatever, that's free. It's the vehicles coming in. That's how we charge day use fees throughout the state park system, is per vehicle. So $5 per vehicle. The operating agreement also has a provision that if we implement a fee structure, then we have to offer a annual pass specific to that park. It's not something we do at other parks. We have statewide annual passes, which are, I think, $125 for all the state parks in the entire system, but we would have to implement one specific for Montana de Oro. So for Montana de Oro, we would implement one for probably $25 a year for a vehicle to enter the park. For volunteers, so for those folks who volunteer in the parks, and we have a lot of volunteers, hundreds of volunteers throughout the state park system in this area, they get a annual pass for volunteering in the parks that gets them free day use entry into all the parks in the district. So everything going from Limekiln State Park down through Montana de Oro, they'd be able to go in for free for volunteering. Another part of the operating agreement is that the funds stay in the park. So most revenue for the state park system goes into the State Park and Recreation Fund, which funds the entire state park system. The fees for this particular portion, so if a fee is established, then those funds would go into a special fund to be spent in Montana de Oro. And the timing on that is actually really good for us, because in the bizarre way that things work with bond money and acquisitions and things, as you may well know, we're acquiring property in the Irish Hills to connect Montana de Oro over to Avila. So half of those properties have already closed escrow, and the other half we're hoping by summer would close, in which case there's an opportunity to extend the coastal trail all the way into Avila from Montana de Oro. But of course, that's acquisition dollars and not operation dollars. So there's zero operation dollars for opening up those additional properties and for establishing the actual coastal trail. So if money is made available through a fee structure, then we would be able to put that into opening those properties pretty much immediately upon charging a fee. So there would be an immediate benefit to the public of having that additional property to enjoy. So this is kind of the overview, just quick things, but I'm sure it's more questions you might have rather than us trying to anticipate what those questions may be. So
okay.
Either of us can answer those questions.
Thank you. Questions? Betty?
I have a couple. I'm not sure. Maybe Mr. Franco. The State Lands Commission was here last week, mm-hmm. and I understand some residents from Los Osos went and asked about whether AT&T could provide some kind of either generous benefit or just as a user's fee through the county. Mr. Jennings maybe would know. As a replacement for the $53,000 required from state parks or from the county to state parks. Do you know anything about that or how it's going?
Yeah. So this is in reference to their cable landing project, which is upcoming. I did have a conversation with Supervisor Gibson today as well. Still trying to understand the exact details of what they're asking to do and what exactly the work is. But as I understand it right now, they're pulling additional cable through existing conduit. And so if they're pulling existing cable through existing conduit, or they're pulling new cable through existing conduit, that's part of the lease that they already have and they pay us annually for. So we wouldn't get additional money for that. So we wouldn't have a way of charging them because they're already paying for that conduit's existence. If, however, the work goes beyond that and actually does something to the park, so they need to use some other part of the park that isn't part of the lease, or the impact of the park is greater in some manner, then we would be able to charge them some fee for that impact, but not charge them a revenue, because there really wouldn't be anything additional that they would be asking to lease or asking to use in addition to what they already have. Now, if the project's beyond just pulling cable through existing conduit, then we'd be talking on what that would be. But as I understand it right now, that's the extent of the project.
And then my second question has to do with if the county owns the road, but you own everything on either side of the road, could you not just put up parking meters or some other kind of thing rather than require the kiosk?
Sure. We could. So there are ways of doing that. We could put those self-pay stations at various places throughout the park, mm-hmm. And collect fees that way. That is something we could do. The difficulty with that is it's quite costly because you got to send somebody around to each and every pay station, collect those, account for those funds, and then deposit those funds, as opposed to having a single collection point right at the entrance. Mm-hmm. In addition, a single point provides you with that opportunity to give people information. Here's where your campsites are. Here's what there is to do. Here's the areas where you can go. You can ride your bike. Here's the areas where you can ride your horse. It's that visitor contact point which we're missing right now. So that's one of those additional benefits that we would have. But it's also just an efficiency in collecting that fee.
Rick? Noah?
Besides the self-pay stations, are there other options you've considered? Because I know there is definitely an aversion to the concept of a kiosk.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything else that you were considering that could help us maybe avoid a structure?
Really, those are the two basic ways of collecting fees that are practical. I mean, certainly you could send somebody around and try and collect like that, but the cost of doing that is just really prohibitive. So really those are the two options that we would be looking at right now. With the kiosk placement, I know that a lot of the comments we've heard is really where that's placed is important, and that's an issue. So clearly I've heard nobody wants it at High Point. Obviously that's the logical point if you're just looking at a flat map and not considering anything else. But obviously we got to consider everything else. So I've heard that loud and clear. And one of the things that I'm looking at doing is try and hopefully February, maybe March, do some sort of a public meeting to really talk through some options on if we can charge a fee and if we're looking at a at a kiosk, where would that go? Where could that be acceptable? And where is it completely unacceptable just for the public? So we wouldn't there would be some level of public scoping before there's an actual proposal that comes out.
And do you have an anticipated or estimate for what sort of the revenue generation would be at the existing proposed cost?
It's hard because you're not sure exactly, you know, how the vehicles are going to come through and counting. Counting vehicles right now, I believe we have 300,000 vehicles about a year that come into Montana de Oro. We don't know how many vehicles would be over on the Avila side if we open that property and if we get that property, so that I'm not including. So if you have 300,000 vehicles, if you collect from maybe a third of them, and it's $5 a vehicle, now you're at $500,000. If a lot of those buy an annual pass, it's decreased. We're estimating it's probably about
$300,000.
Okay, Carla? My only question was, a lot of the state parks have seasonal collection of fees. Would this one be free in the winter? Or?
It would operate similar to Morro Bay and the campground. Okay. So typically what we do is in the summertime, yeah, we're staffed 7 days a week. And in the winter or the off seasons, we typically just staff on weekends, something like that. So that's probably what it would look like. It doesn't mean it's free when we're not there. It just means you're supposed to pay at the kiosk. Usually you have a self-pay box, so okay. As you drive up, you can put your money in there. But as we all know, a lot of times there's people who get in for free.
Okay. Does staff have any questions for?
Okay, just yes, Mr. James, would you say again when this is coming before County Board of Supervisors?
Corporations that are involved with that project to consider this option as either something that could be a fee-related opportunity for us or as a good corporate citizen. And because the AT&T cable EIR comment period is still open, as far as I know, I would like to suggest that we as a council submit a letter to the comment period and the State Lands Commission and the Coastal Commission along the lines of our support of at least the investigation and the request to the companies that are involved and let them know that we're really supportive of that concept and would really be appreciative of anything that they could do to help us take care of this cost and potentially avoid the need for payment into the park. And just wanted to float that idea and see if the rest of the council was interested in at least drafting a simple letter to the Lands Commission and the Coastal Commission.
Is that any problem because it's not on the agenda?
We would have to bring it back as a council agenda, okay. And we can bring it back on consent. It seems like it's a simple idea, but it's only a presentation tonight, so we can't take any formal action, but we could bring it back.
And
I would add that the deadline, though, is January 16th, so maybe as individual members we could send in a letter if we feel moved to do so. Or have the city manager.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Franco.
Just real quickly, as a process question, as you consider drafting that sort of letter, if you're requesting AT&T to directly pay us for that amount, typically the state's going to view that purely as revenue from AT&T and not consider the other. So what is actually owed to the state is from the county. So it would actually have to be a payment from AT&T to the county in order for the county to give those funds to the state, because then it would be an actual payment to the state from the county to satisfy that contractual need. So that's just a subtle clarification, because otherwise, hey, thanks for the cash.
Other discussion?
So the closing period for the comments is the 16th, and it hasn't been extended beyond that. Do we want it to, as a council, to have a letter drafted from one of us and sent?
It wouldn't get there in time, unfortunately. If we have to bring it back for approval, as a group, we couldn't do it, but as individuals, you can.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion? All right. We'll move on. Let's go back to our consent agenda.
A couple hours ago. And we're still underway. We're waiting for the delivery of some mechanical parts. We've got our people ready to respond as soon as the equipment, the parts get here. We're still looking at getting everything up and doing some trial runs and some testing in April and March, and then doing some state-required health testing in April. So we're on track. We feel much more comfortable that things are coming together.
Thank you.
Okay, can I hear a motion approving the consent agenda?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Now, I was worried that we might have people hear about some of these issues. We don't. So I guess I'm just looking at staff and who we can let go earliest. We've got Bruce. Rob has to stay no matter what. And so I guess you're all here for the duration. Okay. All right, so let's go to D2. Then we'll just take things in order, which is approval of funding for a redevelopment feasibility study. Mr. Ambo.
Yes, Madam Mayor and council members. As the city manager indicated earlier, the concept of forming a redevelopment agency surfaced several years ago. Some of the more dated information was when we conducted a revenue enhancement strategy, where this was identified along with raising impact fees. So the concept of establishing a redevelopment agency to help support some of the general fund and shoulder some of the costs was originally identified several years ago and has been a topic of discussion for some time. More recently, as the city manager indicated in the management partners report, this was rated as a high priority, and at your goal setting, the council indicated that we wanted to pursue the formation or at least the investigation of redevelopment opportunities within the community. So this report really brings forward the good news is that we got $34,000 from a community development block grant planning and public planning and technical assistance grant. And the total amount of the feasibility study that we applied would be $87,750, of which $35,000 is grant. And the remainder of the amount has been identified from a revenue fund that we have from an older 5 to 6 months to complete the feasibility study. And then at that time, you'll need to deliberate and decide what it all means, if you're comfortable with the project area, and what the program of activities are that if you want to activate your redevelopment agency, we'll need to embark on that in a formal formation process. And the formal formation process is estimated to take another 13 months. So if, for example, we wanted to hit the base year of 09-10 as our base year, we would need to have the final adopting ordinances completed. I believe it's 90 days. Yeah, I believe it's, they would need to be completed by August 20th of 2010, which would give us enough time to use that as the base year. And that's why we're kind of also along with this item trying to raise your attention to this concept of timing, because it is of the essence if we are successful in meeting this time frame to get that base year, which is what is reasonable. But it does assume that we are going at the bureaucratic equivalent of the speed of light also. So we need to get moving fairly quickly on it if the council is interested in pursuing it. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Questions for Bruce? Rick?
Hey, Bruce. Page one, bottom paragraph. When you talk about CDBG funding applications, expected to be 35 grand. How many applications is that, or is that, how much is an application, or does this reflect multiple applications?
We applied for two. We only received one, and we're going to go up and visit with them on that, because this is very different from the feedback we got all along, so we were surprised. And furthermore, we want to talk to them because we want to apply in future years. So we've already secured $35,000. But in future, like next funding cycle, we will apply for two grants at $35,000 for a total of $70,000, which would also bring the amount of city expenditure down that amount.
So is it 17.5 each application?
No, they're 35 each.
They're 35 so for the one two application.
Yeah, 35. So two combined would be 70,000.
Okay, and why is it to our advantage to do this over a low base year?
Because any increase in assessed property.
I mean, the part we're not understanding what Rick had just pointed out, Mr. Grantham. But then comparing that to the very last page in the notes, it's called page 2, but it's actually the back page of our report. Under number 12, what talks about this project is the $204,000. How does that mesh with the $87,000? And is that overflow for the second company that's working as a subcontractor for the main company?
No, it's not overflow. And that second... The second attachment is for the formal formation, which is step two of this process. Mm-hmm. Step one is the feasibility study, mm-hmm. and that's only $87,750. Then you need to decide. We'll come back with a feasibility study. You'd review it, see if you agree with it. You'll have more information to base an informed decision on, mm-hmm. and then decide if you want to do the more expensive phase two study, which is the $204,000 investment. But at that point, it won't be as risky, presumably, because you'll have the answers to whether blight exists, to what extent it exists in the community, and you'll have some projections on projected tax increment growth, and you'll have some projections on what might be diverted from the taxing entities. And all of these are kind of speculative at this point until till this gets to be less of a moving target. And the only way we're going to do that is by conducting the feasibility study.
Just follow up to that. Then this $87,000 is only to the initials, the urban people?
That's correct.
Urban Futures. Are they subcontracting any part of this initial part to this other company?
Yes, they would be.
But then we still have to pay the other company on top of the 87?
No, that's part of the 87.
Okay, because that's in the long-term one, it sounded like that we pay them one fee and then we have to pay the others.
No, that their fee is integrated in that proposal too. What they mentioned is if we do specialized studies, okay, and that isn't, at this juncture, we don't know if specialized studies are going to be necessary. The accompanying firm that's subcontracting with Urban Futures specializes in is economic blight,
mm-hmm.
and the economic projections, and where Urban Futures is more well-versed in credit, mm-hmm. $44,000 right. of their work in the feasibility study mm-hmm. towards the formal formation, mm-hmm. and AGA right. has not offered that.
Right, I get that.
But,
okay. but and then we also have the... And then am I also misreading this where it says the $2,750 is on top of the $87,000 for their out-of-pocket services?
I'm sorry.
Page 5 still.
It's that same paragraph.
Under professional services fee.
But that's those are the reimbursable expenses, yes.
So, yeah,
so that's how we got to the total amount of $87,750. Because the base amount is
okay.
83 and then...
Okay. And then that's added on to the 83 to get to the 87.
Right.
I see. Okay.
Okay. Rick, you have another one?
One more, Bruce. When this is all said and done, are redevelopment agencies normally in a continuous, concentrated area, or are they ever split up into three or four different areas of the
city? We'll find that out. I've dealt with both. We've had them contiguous and discontiguous. We've had older ones added, we've had newer ones added to older ones, and then we've had newer ones that were contiguous that we established as new ones. So it can go either way, and there's a costs and benefits to each, and they're kind of unique situation depending upon the circumstances in every different situation.
Okay, Noah?
Bruce, could you speak briefly to the concept of state seizures of redevelopment funds and just give us an update about what you see in the future with that and any potential problems we should be aware of?
Right. You know, that's a good question because the The state sent the redevelopment agencies a bill for the Education Revenue Augmentation Fund, also known as ERAF, for agencies that were in operation between fiscal years 08 and 09, okay? And they sent them a bill that equated to about 3 to 4% for ERAF from the 06-07 years. And that was a surprise, and it's my understanding the California Redevelopment Association is challenging that in court. So they sent them a bill for 3 to 4% for this ERAF diversion for 1 year. And most folks will tell you that something like that may occur again because of the state's budget crisis.
Notice that there were two workshops in, I think, 2005. There was a town hall meeting, in 2005, July. I was just curious to know, are there official notes available from that meeting? And just interested to see what the community response was at that point.
Actually, I wouldn't characterize it. It was a presentation at our council meeting, and I have the presentation. It was pretty much a kind of a redevelopment 101 and a snapshot presentation. Okay. And these folks have been up here. They've worked in other communities up in our county that I'm aware of. They're the only redevelopment consultants that are worked up in this area. And so they're pretty familiar. They've been here 3 or 4 times, and they think we may have something to work with, but haven't really done the formal analysis. But they did give us a presentation just about, you know, some of the basics of redevelopment and how it all works. But I'd be happy to share the PowerPoint presentation with you, but it's really pretty basic.
And it's on tape.
Right. That should be, yeah.
Carla? I'm sorry. No, were you finished? Okay. Carla? Any questions?
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Bruce, I think you answered a lot of my questions earlier, but I still have a couple I'm confused on. On the grid sheet that's in there about the blight indicators, you answered some of the questions that was the state's grid sheet, and that we could create our own because each parcel has to have a number of 20.
Right.
So we don't have to follow the state guidelines or for that criteria. We do. I mean, from what I read in there, I kind of understood that we did, but then you said we can modify it to our own.
Well, we can modify them. These aren't actually the state guidelines handed to everybody that everybody has to use. These are the response that these consultants have come up to develop a more structured, objective format to quantify and measure blight indicators on a pretty subjective or a pretty objective basis. So it's not something the state says you need to do it, and this is how they responded, and I think it's a pretty good response. We have the ability to customize this where if we feel a certain condition of blight is more severe or a sensitivity to that kind of blight is more severe, and we can adjust the rating scale, if you like. And ultimately, your council would be the ones that would have to accept the recommendations of that blight analysis. So you'll have the final say at the end on whether or not you agree to indicators. Then we just need to make sure we're consistent throughout the entire analysis within our community.
Okay. Thanks. No, you had something else? I'm sorry, Carla.
Yeah, I have more. Sorry. I know I answered a lot of the questions, but I still have some. I'll try and be. And is it my understanding then that the RDA money cannot be used in the general fund then? It has to go specific?
We can make findings, like for affordable housing, we can make findings that it's benefiting it's benefiting the project area. So especially there's more flexibility for doing affordable housing projects, of which 20% of the revenues need to be set aside for the provision of affordable housing. That's by state mandate. So we're going to that, and every year we'd have to report on what we did with the inventory and how we spent that money towards providing and promoting affordable housing. So, there are some conditions where we could spend money outside of the area if we make certain findings that it's benefiting the project area. So, but generally speaking, like if you're looking, for example, at infrastructure improvements, roads or utilities, that would normally almost always be within the project area of the boundaries of the redevelopment project area.
So it's would be long term for the general fund, and also then one of the questions I'd asked you was about the schools, the school district, and you had addressed the local school district about some opportunities and options there, but you didn't address the county really so much. Is there some ideas that you have in backfilling? I mean, that's going to be a big issue. I see that as a big issue with the shortcomings.
It certainly will, and there's significant players in this. Significant stakeholders, but we're really kind of speculating at this point because we don't know how much we stand to generate, because we don't know how much blight exists until we do the feasibility study, nor will we know how much money we would divert from those entities until we've actually looked at this. So we really don't know how much the hit would be to them until we do the feasibility study, nor do we know what the upside benefits would be to this community until we see if we have blight and can justify it. So it's difficult to speculate on what kind of things we may do until we know what kind of condition we're going to be in. They've worked in Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, the city of San Luis, the county of San Luis, I think in Arroyo Grande. So they're pretty familiar with our county. And I'm happy to hear that they work for the county, because they'll be a major stakeholder ultimately if we go forward, and they're pretty familiar with them too.
Thank you.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, my final thought was for you to speak briefly to what you see if we decide to go forward with the formation of the agency, what you would anticipate to be needs from the planning department, and potential adjustments we need to make, costs within those adjustments. Is that something that you think we can handle as a department? And
we're going to have to. I mean, this is identified as a revenue enhancement strategy, and we all recognize our financial conditions, and this obviously has been a report this action is a goal and an important one in the council, and we recognize that. And yes, there'll be more work. There'll be a significant amount of work, but it'll just need to get done. Yes, it will impact us, but to what degree, it's difficult. Now, at this point, for the feasibility study, we're really just looking at getting them information and letting them do that. And I can deal with that. When we get in the formal formation, you'll have a fair amount of agenda items coming at you, and more staff reports and more analysis.
At current staff levels, would we be able to handle those?
I believe so. I think it'll just add more work. But I think the other staff in our department doesn't have familiarity with redevelopment, so that's good and bad. I mean, but the advantage of Urban Futures is that they have a turnkey approach where they'll do the whole thing. They'll give it, if we do the process, they'll write the ordinances. We will need some supplemental services from a redevelopment council. There will be some other thing, like we'll have to pay for noticing and some of these other things. So there'll be some extras, but that's in the formal formation process. And at that time, if you decide to do that, we will come back with an estimate of what that does to our process. But at this point, we think we can deal with it, especially for the feasibility study. But if you decide to go forward, we'll come back with what that does to the department.
Betty, just one more. Mr. Ambrose, any other questions? Are we ready for discussion? And who would like to start? Noah, you want to start?
Sure. This is definitely a concept that's been talked quite a bit about, and at first I was a little bit concerned about the ideas that a redevelopment agency brings, and particularly the image that it brings is a large, major change in our community. So as has been pointed out, one of the big challenges, if we were to proceed with this, is going to be developing community buy-in and a set of goals and parameters that our community can feel comfortable with. So generally, I know this is probably premature, but I'd really want to make sure that we focus on a good visioning process if we proceed and developing community buy-in. I'd really like to see low-impact development, green building and design as key components to our goals within the feasibility and the redevelopment projects themselves. Definitely architectural and historical preservation, and these are things that I've observed are very possible within redevelopment. And so I am interested in proceeding here. I think this is a really exciting, potentially opportunity for us. And as long as we can work out the differences that may have been here in the past and get buy-in and visioning within the different factions of our community, I'm optimistic that this will be a really valuable addition to our portfolio.
Okay. Carla?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity to look forward for some redevelopment opportunities. I think it's something we've wanted to do for a long time. I'm very concerned about the state's end of it, and I'm just wanting us to proceed with caution as we make this investment. I think it's a lot of money. The unforeseen expenses as we get into the final cost. It's not even so much the feasibility study, but as we move forward with what it's going to cost and get into the $300,000 of making this investment, and if everybody's not on board where that puts us, and it's not going to be a short-term or a short-term turnaround, it's going to take a while to recoup that money. It'll be 5 and 10 years down the road before we... You know, we see that long-term, I think, return on it. So I certainly look forward to what it can bring us in some redevelopment opportunities. But
with the increase in salaries that we've promised over the next 3 years, and now we have to come up with $200,000 or $300,000, I don't know where that money comes from. I want to do this. We've come up with $35,000 out of the $87,000. Maybe we have $50,000 from somewhere else, but we don't have this kind of, even this little kind of money right now. So how do you find money to order to create money? So I have a lot of fear about how we're going to pay for this, and I hate to see us go forward if we can't follow through the whole way. Otherwise, we've spent the $87,000, and then what? And I have no doubt that we're going to find blight. I have no doubt that there may be some extenuating circumstances because we are a harbor community. So I'm seeing this being more and more expensive. And not that that's bad, particularly if we had money, but we don't have money. So I guess I need to hear from the finance director how this is going to work.
Okay. Susan?
Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. We have $174,000 in deprogrammed CDBG money that's available for this project. We have loans that have been in escrow that have just recently fallen out, properties that have fallen out. These are also old loans that are part of the deprogrammed money. So we do have the potential to get more of the deprogrammed money that could go into this pot. But if we're looking at it from just what we've got the $174,000. I think the amount in total that we're talking about is about $250,000. Is that correct, Bruce?
The total amount is $204,000. It's about $204,000, but I would say another 10% of that, at least for miscellaneous expenses, we'll have to get, you know, supplemental redevelopment council, and they'll be noticing. We're going to have to notice if we do the formal formation. We'll have to notice. There'll be several hearings where we have to notice everybody in the project area.
Then in that case, we may be short about $50,000, and that's what we're looking at, and that could be recouped from, from future properties that are of the deprogrammed money that's set.
And I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be successful getting the same grant we got this time, because we're getting more closer to actually fulfilling a need.
Okay. Ben, anything else?
Well,
I'm not sure $175,000 or even the extra $50,000. The $50,000 that you're saying can cover the other part of this $87,000 is not part of the $175,000 that you're talking about? Or
that's
it is?
Correct. We've got the $175,000 that's sitting in the bank as deprogrammed CDBG money. If the total cost of setting up the agency is roughly 204, and then Mr. Ambo said another 10%, so let's say 225. We are $50,000 short, but there are other grants that we can qualify or that we can apply for, as Mr. Ambo stated, and offset that $50,000 that we don't have.
But the $50,000 we need for this right now is not what part of the $175,000. It's out of a different pot of money.
No, that's not correct.
Okay, so the $50,000 we need for this piece is part of that $175,000.
Yes.
Okay, and then on top of that, we'll need another $200,000. So
no.
What we'll need after this is $160,000. I hope that isn't the net. The total net cost is $160,000 beyond what we've
seen. Beyond this one. And then does that include then that other company that's not included?
Yeah, that includes the $44,000 that got credited. That's how we got that down.
There's a subcontractor to Urban Futures. Yeah.
They're paid from Urban Futures, and Urban Futures' cost is total.
And even though it says it's different on the back page?
If they do supplemental economic analysis, okay. But the base proposal includes the proposal from AGA. Mm-hmm. I just spoke with these four folks on Friday.
Okay, I'm just saying that's not how it reads, so I was confused. That's fine. I'll believe you. I believe you.
I'd be happy to read it, too, if you like to get it in the record. It really says that.
Yep. Rick? Susan, so we have two properties in escrow currently that, when the deals are done, that money will be deprogrammed CDGB fund, correct?
Yes.
And there's really no way to project how many more of these will come, because they only happen when the properties, I know they're all different depending on how much they sell for, but these two, just as an example, would you be able to give me a ballpark?
One of them was $9,800 and the other one is $4,300. So it's about a third of the part that we're missing.
Okay, and just for clarification, the CDBG funds that are now available to us, they're only available for this kind of project, right? I mean, we can't put them into the general fund and use them for salaries or anything.
Madam Mayor, the program that's active now does have restrictions to it. That's called program income, and there are a number of restrictions into using that for the program that's active now. But what Susan is mentioning is that this is from deactivated program from old CDBG funds that doesn't have any restrictions.
So that could be put in the general fund and used for salaries?
I suppose it could.
I mean, that's what I'm looking at. You know, we got a way back and forth here, and I'm not suggesting we do that. But this is one of the top things on our list of things to do to create more revenue for the city. And I think we need to start taking those risks. I know they're risks. I understand that. But if we don't do something, we're just going to keep going down in the hole. So we've got just to take the first step. And if somewhere down the line the $87,000 goes away because we tried, then that's sad. But we've got to make the step. We've got to try. And I appreciate the fact that Bruce has been through this. He knows what he's doing. And I think that we ought to just take that leap of faith and go with it. So, yeah, I'm ready.
I'd like to make a motion to approve D2, approval of funding for a redevelopment feasibility study.
Do I hear a second? I'll second. Obviously, we need some discussion. We have concerns about this still.
I think it's just feeling really fast. And I understand the desire to move ahead quickly, because the longer we put it off, then the longer it'll be before we start seeing the benefit or start working out the cobwebs that need to be worked out with other agencies. It's the wrong term, but what's going to be happening with the schools and stuff.
It's a big decision.
Well, it is, and but I beg to differ about the speed because, as you said, you know, the time it takes to do this process, we need to start now. And to start when there's a really low property value is a...
Sets of funding to pay for the feasibility study. And when I, one of the questions I had asked you was about whether it was staff time or you know, for the in-kind. So it's not all a cash layout either.
It is a purely cash match. And that is just in terms of administering the contract was just easier for us. So it's a $5,250 match, which is set by our jurisdictional limits for CDBG. So that's what they told us. We have a 15% match, and that's what it equated to. And we just said, we'll pay with cash. And the match is the first thing that goes. But we're going to go talk to them because there's clearly some miscommunication on what happened. We're really disappointed we didn't get the other part of this because it's for affordable housing, and we already participate in the CDBG affordable housing program. So it's really kind of ironic that they said it didn't justify for the housing side of this when we're already participating in the program. So we have some communication things we've got to go over with them. But we will apply in next funding cycle, so conceivably we could have 70, and the following year we could have another 70.
When is the next funding cycle?
It begins... I think that started like in April or something, March. Yeah, we'll be ready. I assure you, we will be ready to go because we carried this item for this grant on several agendas until the notice of funding was released, and we got it in the following week. So we'll do the same thing this year. I mean, next funding cycle. But I think it's somewhere around July is when. You authorize the applications to be submitted. But they require, the CDBG requires a needs hearing to begin with. You'll have two hearings, see if everybody wants to spend it on this kind of a project. We'll have a hearing for that. And then we anticipate applying in at least one or two successive seasons, and hopefully up to 70 each time.
I think my concerns really, you know, and I want to support this. I think it's just I don't want to see us do another study we don't use, and I'm more concerned about the state than us. But I know we looked at this back in the 90s. This is something, this has gone on for a long time. So, you know, I want to support it and take the leap.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. He was the one who helped draft this ordinance. This is a complete rewrite of Chapter 10 of our Morro Bay Municipal Code, which deals with vehicles and traffics. We apologize for not being able to give you a red line after looking at our current and then comparing it with other cities and developing one that pretty much mimics the city of San Luis Obispo because theirs was the last to really do this update. So we've provided you with this first draft to go over any comments. Even speaking this morning at the staff report, at the staff meeting, I've already come up with some other little changes that I've got to make to it. So it's basically just kind of a type of workshop. It's not your first reading. We're bringing an initial time. It'll probably come back for first reading in a month in February. So certainly even if you didn't get a chance to review it all, you certainly can provide your comments to myself or John. Some of the major changes I would say is you know, we prevented cars with the for sale signs in them before. You can't do that anymore pursuant to state law. And what we've really tried to do is one of our major concerns, hearing complaints, was some of the RVs, motorhomes being parked in certain areas of the city. And then also we've had some issues with parking in our central business district, and so we're trying to eliminate that during certain periods and also in our city parking lots. But again, you know, some of that stuff we're kind of thinking now might be too restrictive. One of the things we've done is eliminate all parking in all the city parking lots between 2 and 6 a.m. except for the Tidelands parking lot. And, you know, that could create some problems, for example, if our fishing industry picked back up and we had some, you know, cars coming at 3 a.m. to get early fishing starts. So, you know, like I said, it's a working document. I'm not looking for any typos. I'll certainly take those at any other time or any of those issues. But it was mainly if you saw any major concerns even with, you know, the rewritten or the older one, we're here to answer any of those questions, and John's here also to help me.
Okay. Questions, anyone? I have a couple. I'll start. Just for clarification on both of mine, under obstructions to visibility, I know we've had problems with people parking vehicles close to intersections and that it blocks visibility, or close to driveways. I don't know if we can do anything about that. But I just thought that in 1060.020, it might be worthwhile to specify the word vehicle so that that is, you can say structure, but... Or
okay.
I don't see a 1060.050.
No, just goes to 020. Where it says, all at intersections not controlled by a stop sign or traffic signal, no plant, structure, or other solid object over 3 feet high. Now, I know a car will fit into that definition of other solid object, but I think it might be nice to specify vehicle, because people might not think that a vehicle counts if it's in a parking place, or they consider it a parking place.
I don't think you could put it in this area, because this deals with structures and zoning ordinances.
Oh, okay.
What the nice thing about this ordinance, what it does allow is the formation, official recognition of the traffic committee, and it also gives the city traffic engineer powers to erect signs in certain areas that are problematic. For example, let's say there's a specific intersection where there really is a bad blind spot, then the traffic committee can meet, and the traffic engineer now has the authority to go out and either paint a curb red or post a sign or something like that, where the other old ordinance didn't do that. So we can take those things on a case-by-case basis.
But there's nowhere in the ordinance that a vehicle parked and creating... I mean, I know down on the Embarcadero, we have areas where it's posted that you can't put an RV on the corner because it blocks the site for people wanting to turn onto the Embarcadero. Is that addressed anywhere in here? I just missed it.
I'm not sure I follow you. If there is an area that's identified and we go out and look at it and that's a visual obscurement, then the traffic engineer in this new ordinance would have the authority to either paint that curb red or do something to eliminate that traffic obscurement. If you put a restriction in that you couldn't park a vehicle near any intersection, that would be pretty difficult because there's hundreds of intersections in the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think this section is pertaining to structures and okay. planters and things like that.
All right. Let's try my other... Did you have another question on that one?
Well, yeah. I think, Chief DeRohan, I think what the mayor is trying to ask him the same thing, maybe it's a different section, was about the height limits as you're approaching, because I know it's a problem when I come out every day from work and you can't see to make a left-hand turn, whether it's on the Embarcadero or the streets, and a height restriction of some sort, what section is that in? Because some streets have it posted that you can't park a vehicle or something over 6 feet or 7 feet, and I saw it in here.
Over, I'd have to look and find the section. But I'm not sure it deals exactly with parking on the edge of an intersection.
Well, maybe we just put that one down for something we'd like to see included somewhere or some kind of response to that problem, because it is a problem. Especially on the Embarcadero and our commercial areas. Rob, did you know?
The Embarcadero is already height restricted. The Embarcadero area is height restricted. As far as parking too close to an intersection, that would be evaluated through a site distance analysis. Right now, the way it's written right now, at any uncontrolled intersection, no stop signs. You couldn't park within the site distance triangle set forth in the zoning code, which is 15 feet back from that intersection. So you'd be restricted from parking within that 15 feet from the intersection.
And is there any way to address the situation in a residential neighborhood where, because I had this, somebody asked me this, so I'm asking, RVs park on either side of a driveway and they have absolutely no sight line coming out of their driveway. Is there anything we can do about that, or is that just public parking and sorry?
No, we could evaluate the site distance based on their standards for driveways and how far you need to see back in order to back okay. up safely. And other jurisdictions have allowed red curb. It's typically about 3 feet on either side of a driveway, so you're not parking right up against the driveway approach, so that when you can't see absolutely nothing when you back up.
Okay, and that would be something that they would bring up to the traffic committee to decide.
Exactly.
Okay.
We do a site distance analysis of it and confirm that there is a site distance issue there. And then there are several ways to administer that. The city of San Luis does it with a red curb permit. They allow the property owner to they have many more concrete curbs than we do here, but they would paint that curb red under permit, and the property owner would maintain that red curb.
Okay.
Where there's no curb and gutter, we would probably control that with a sign. No parking signs or red on the asphalt berm there.
Okay. All right. And my other question was about parkways. And I just is under the definitions at the beginning of the draft. And the stopping and standing is under stopping, standing, and parking for certain purposes under Chapter 1040. It didn't make sense to me. I don't. Maybe I'm just not getting it. But to me, a parkway is where you put the trees and the plants in between the driveway and the sidewalk. I mean, the street and the sidewalk. But we don't have sidewalks in most places. So, is there another definition of parkway in Morro Bay?
That would be typically a parkway definition. Is that area between the face of curb and the sidewalk?
Right.
The way the code reads, it's anything outside of the street and sidewalk area. So it could be actually where we have some of our streets have enormous right-of-ways, so there could be, by this definition, have parkway back behind the sidewalk. We need to better define parkway and what we mean by parkway and where we don't want people to park.
Yeah. It's very confusing.
This is really getting at, I see, where people park in their driveway and they overhang the sidewalk, and so they're actually blocking that. I believe that's the purpose behind
okay,
it.
Okay, now I would not have got that from this, so maybe we need to work on that definition.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. Carla, do you have some?
Yeah, I had asked several questions to Chief DeRohan, but I'm not real sure then, John, in here, which section addresses the overnight camping or not sleeping. I see in 1040 it talks about no parking or storage of your boats or trailers in the business district, but as Mr. Seamus was asking about the residential district, I know it was posted before, and you had addressed that coming into the entrances of the city, but is it in here in the new draft that you can't camp in your vehicles in residential areas? I know it's posted in the business parking lots.
I know we transferred that same part of the ordinance over from the last one to this one. Give us a second. We'll try to find it.
Okay. And then, Mr. Livick, are you the one then who determines is it your going to go around and repost as we initiate this new ordinances with all the speeds and everything all reestablished? Are you going to be able to post, repost all these areas that it's adjusting? I know a lot of the streets don't even have a post.
Very few speed limits get modified. The speed survey basically confirmed most of our speed limits. There was some adjustments on Quintana and on Atascadero Road is where speeds were higher than are posted and were within the 85th percentile. The way the state regulation is written now, we do not have the ability to reduce it more than 5 miles an hour less than the 85th percentile speed. So you will be seeing increases at three locations in speed limits.
And then what about the business areas, like all the, I know on Beach Street, I go down it every day, and all those that go down to the Embarcadero, none of those are posted. Is that just a standard speed there on all those also?
Yes, the Central Traffic District is 25 miles per hour, all within the Central Traffic District. I believe the entrances into the central traffic district are posted at 25 miles an hour. That difficult section to drive at 25 miles an hour on Quintana, I know that's posted
downhill.
Because it's nearly impossible to drive 25 miles an hour coming down the hill there. It gives your brakes a real workout.
Thank you.
Noah?
Yeah, actually, I'm interested to know if there was consideration of including some reference to, I guess you'd call them carts and non-highway motor vehicles. I'm thinking specifically electric vehicles potentially. And I foresee the increased use of those in the future. And is that something that we should consider including within this, or is that not necessary? I'm just kind of curious to know.
I can address that. It's not necessary because it's covered. Excuse me. It's covered in the vehicle code. The vehicle code. Boy, I can't even speak. Let me start over here. The vehicle code describes what a. There's different definitions that golf carts have certain restrictions and certain definitions, and then the low speed vehicles is the other one that the vehicle code addresses. And it pretty much spells out where they can go and where they can't go. They can't cross a state highway, so you can't drive one of those little electric vehicles that you see around town. They can't cross Highway 1, but they can, if I can recall correctly, they can go anywhere on a street that's less than 35 miles an hour. And so that's all addressed in the vehicle.
We're okay with that.
Yes.
Excellent. Would charging stations potentially need to be included within that discussion if there were going to be an installation of a charging station, for instance, at a commercial facility? Would we need to consider that at all?
I think that would be beyond the scope of this regulation. Okay. That would be addressed through the planning process, through the development review stage. When we get to that point, whether charging stations would be appropriate. My understanding with the new electric vehicles is there's not a they don't need the I got John's problem now. The sophisticated charging stations as were required in the past, like the ones I'm thinking of are in the parking garage in San Luis and at Staples, quite a complex charging station there. Now it's basically 110 volt outlet is what you need for them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Rick? Betty?
I just have to say it was quite a task to begin to even compare the old with the new, and I did not get very far, so I do not feel comfortable commenting yet, and so I'll try to get that done over the next month if you want it done over the next month, but it was overwhelming.
And it's still overwhelming for me. As I go through it right now, there's some inconsistencies. So like I said, it's just for the initial presentation to you. We'll have a whole month to go through it, and then we'll all, I think, have a better idea of exactly the changes we're making to it.
Okay. Anything else?
I have an answer to there's a couple different areas that that addresses the overnight camping. One is, Bruce, what was that section? .10-40-150 addresses very large commercial vehicles, and then .10-44-070 addresses all-night parking prohibited in the central traffic district.
.10-88 addresses on Beachcomber.
We have a section that was in our old one that you should spend some specific time on, and that's .10-88, which actually prevents recreation vehicles altogether on certain streets, and it lists out many streets, one being Beachcomber. Yeah. So technically where he's on, there shouldn't be any recreation vehicles unless that permit is obtained. So look at that. I mean, a lot of these code sections were from 1965. So some of them we did transfer over that I might be coming back and really pointing out specifically other issues on there. So they keep coming up. But when you do look at it, I think I would look at it just from a fresh eye and not so much looking back, but looking at what makes sense in this ordinance from our current perspective, and where do we want some of the no parking, where do we don't want it.
All right, so we're finished with that one. Anybody need a break, or you want to go ahead to D4? I'm bouncing around to let people go home
So.
I'd love to have a little 5-minute break.
Okay, and then we'll come back with D4, and then we can get Bruce out of here. We're going to start with item D4, which is a review of the permit fee for waterfront projects. And Bruce, this one's yours.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This item was placed on the agenda by one of the council members some time ago, and it relates to this fairly high fee that we have for we call it a waterfront review fee, which is 200% of the conditional use permit review fee. And the purpose of this item is to really get some direction from your council on what you'd like to do. We're putting this on here so that you can talk about it and give us direction. We really haven't researched this very much, because we don't have the staff on staff anymore that worked on these projects. And as further background, when we did a comprehensive analysis of our fees, I found out that we didn't really get at, we didn't really do a cost revenue study for this fee itself. Yeah. And it might have been because it was embedded in the plan development overlay fee, or it probably was. And there was a little background in there at the time. There was a lot of concern amongst some members of the community that with the whole plan development zone in general. And in fact, that item is still on the Planning Commission workload from the mm-hmm. last time we updated. Was trying to get at that cost. I don't have any good estimate on the origin of the fee, other than it was probably just because it's in the waterfront and the design guidelines, and the photo simulation analysis. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, my one question would be: so, if you did an analysis, we could come back with something that might be more reasonable.
I believe so, yeah. And that's, I think we could look at, the next project we do, we can certainly take a closer look at how the time is spent and how much more time there is. See, this fee is 200% on top of the base fee for the use permit, which is $3,600. And then there may be an environmental review fee, and then there may be a fee for a variance request or anything. I don't know if there is or isn't. So the total fee just for this, the use permit and the waterfront, can equate to over $10,000. We've had four of these in the past since 2006. There's not many of these that we see very often. But we can certainly look at it. But right now, if you give me some direction on what you'd like to know, I'd be happy to look into it.
Okay. Other questions? Carla?
Hi. Yeah, I again emailed Bruce ahead of time, and in looking at the master fee schedule, and I was able to get some information on the Coastal Commission's change last year too, and something that I thought maybe might be an option for us to look at would be that they're doing a tiered level of fees. And it seems that maybe that would be an option that would be adjustable based on the project itself, rather than having a flat fee. But it, if somebody were doing a remodel, perhaps the fee would be more, whatever we decided, $500, $1,000, something, depending on the staff time involved, versus a project that was a full-on project that was a $2 million or $3 million project and generating a lot more time. And tier it on a level that would be more appropriate rather than a flat rate to everybody. So the $10,000 right now that's generated plus other fees is also on top of what the Coastal Commission's charging them. And so it makes it pretty difficult for somebody that we're trying to encourage to do renovation and projects on the waterfront to move forward with those elaborate fees. It seems a little
accept
a fee at this point, and so definitely sensitive to the high level of cost for projects. At the same time, we all realize the impacts to our community and infrastructure and the need for us to compensate our staff with that time. So I personally have found a really positive review towards the concept of building in some incentives that promote what we'd like to see. And in my opinion, and I think staff's opinion, we have been promoting green building and design, low-impact development. And I would like to see us tonight direct staff to start to develop a permit fee process that encourages and incentivizes green building and design so that those projects that do follow that process and work along those lines and will have less impacts are recognized for those positive impacts. And that's really something I think would be valuable across the board, even outside of the coastal zone there.
Okay. Rick?
So, Bruce, since 2006, we've realized less than $30,000 on these fees, which really isn't a whole lot in the scheme of things. The work involved in waterfront projects, does it necessitate this 200% increase?
Well, we'll get a better idea once we go through it and track our time. We haven't been tracking our time with this in mind.
Is it too difficult to go back and see what you did on the four since 2006 and get an idea if that justifies it?
Well, the people that did it aren't here anymore, so that part of it's difficult. But I didn't do the analysis or write the reports or work with the applicants directly, so I really didn't experience how the whole thing went. Initially, it seems a little high. Because there is a fee that we charge, you know, but I just don't know how high. And, that's my sense of it. But I really, really haven't looked at it when we've done these projects because other staff has done the analysis and prepared the report.
So you say in the future we'll be able to get an idea, right?
Yeah, we'll definitely get an idea. I'll meet with whoever the planner. I would meet with whoever is handling this and talk to them and see how the time was, concept plans or anything like that. I'd have a better answer once I talk to the harbor director.
I guess I'm just wondering, is 2009 soon enough where we get an idea, or are we looking at longer down the road than that for the justification?
I'm not aware of anybody that's okay. Sending a project forward
all
now.
Right.
Betty?
Excuse me. Until my experience on council has been that when projects come from the waterfront, they're very involved, very complex, very intense. So I can understand why this must be an appropriate fee at 200% because there is so much involved. If there's no tracking, however, it'd be nice if we started doing that so we can justify that. I am not opposed to the idea of the tiered system. That sounds appropriate if you're doing a remodel versus a full-on thing, whole redevelopment. So any of those things that come into the mix, I'm glad to look at, but I don't want to get rid of this until it's justified that it's not appropriate.
Okay, well, I tend to feel that way, too. I think whatever we can use, whatever way is reasonable to do this so that, you know, yes, it is cost-effective for covering our actual costs, but if we're overcharging, let's not do it anymore. So I would say, you know, as soon as you can put your hands around something that would be reasonable, whether it's when the next project comes up or if a tiered thing can work easily, if you could bring that back to us to look at. Does that sound good? Do we need a motion on that? Okay.
I'd move that we direct staff to develop a tracking system and consider the potential of a tiered permitting system and a fee for green building incentives.
A fee or a reduction in fees?
I guess you'd say a reduction.
How about just an incentive for green building?
An incentive for green building.
If we could break this into a couple motions, because one motion just deals with the waterfront projects, which is your agenda item.
Okay.
And then the other would be future agenda items to come back with a tiered system for green building. As for this one, I think the direction in the motion would be for staff to track the next project or two projects that are in the waterfront district and bring back you an analysis of the costs associated therewith to see if there should be any reduction or increase in the price.
With an analysis of time spent and return to us with further discussion in regards to the appropriate level of fee.
Could I just ask that not be necessarily future projects, because we do have some before us. Could it be current and future?
Sure.
Okay. Then I would second that.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you.
And I would like to make that follow-up motion.
I think that has to be a future agenda item.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we will move to item D3. Sorry for bouncing around here. Discussion of placing the Dynergy funds in the accumulation fund. And this is Susan.
Thank you, Mayor Peters and council members. This is more of a cleanup item that council member Grantham brought through. We are currently using the Dynergy $500,000 as part of our revenue or our revenue mix when preparing our budget for the general fund. And one of the problems with that is that's not an ongoing source of revenue. And general fund needs to be budgeted based on ongoing revenue sources to cover ongoing expenditures. The Dynergy money has a sunset date of November 2012. And it would be more appropriate for that money to have been in the accumulation fund from the first time we got it and then transferred to the general fund if we needed it to balance our revenues against our expenditures. That's what's proposed here, is to place the money into the accumulation fund. Then at the actually, in the budgeting process, it would not be a it would not be considered an operating revenue. It would be considered a transfer in from the accumulation fund. So you're doing some housekeeping. You're moving it from the top. You're moving it out of operating money, and you're placing it as a transfer in. It makes it very clear that our operating revenues do not cover our operating expenses without that $500,000. And then we've got it in there as a transfer in to balance the fund. But it places more clarity, more was used for that purpose because that was considered an operating revenue. It's not really going away. You're not putting it in the accumulation fund and saying you can't touch it. It's just moving it into a spot where it really more logically should have always been. It never should have been included in the revenue mix. It's not an ongoing operating revenue. So by moving it out, it's over in the accumulation fund with a transfer in to move it back in. It's just an accounting, measure designed to be more transparent about what our operating revenues really are and the transfers that we're relying on to balance our budget.
Okay, other questions? I'll make another question out there then. Okay. Typically, the council doesn't want to move things out of that accumulation fund because that's sort of a reserve. We renamed it, but it still is a reserve. And so we typically do not use those funds for anything ongoing. Are we going to be able to even have a budget if we don't make those transfers that we technically don't want to use because they aren't forever? They're temporary?
It depends on what type of new revenue sources that council approves so that we can no longer be reliant on that money. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing this, is to draw attention to the fact that we need more revenues. We desperately need more revenues because we have a ticking bomb that's set to go off in a very short period of time, and we'd like to draw attention to it sooner than later.
Okay. Okay, comments? Rick, you want to start? Sure.
Well, yeah, I brought this up last year. I everything I say is probably going to be just what Susan's just said. The clock's ticking. If we just signed a lease for 50 years, that's one thing to go ahead and say, okay, let's depend on this for a little bit. But we're going to wake up one day real soon, and that money's not going to be here. And we're going to say, okay, what do we do now? Well, it's our charge and our responsibility to not let that happen. We need to separate money that is not going to be ongoing, put it to the side. Like Susan says, we need it, we can transfer, and not depend on money that's not going to be there. To do so is very irresponsible.
Okay, Betty?
Well, I have the opposite opinion. I think more along with your fears, Madam Mayor, and that is that we are already very conscious of the fact that we have a financial problem. I'm always very aware when I look at the budget that I see that $500,000 there every year. It's got its own line item, so I know what it is, and I know that we depend on it. And I know if we take it out, we're going to be in trouble. We're in trouble already. But we do depend on that money, and I don't see why moving it out, moving it back in doesn't make a difference to me. I mean, we're spending it. We're depending on it. We have new increases in our salaries, not just with the old ones. And it may go away in 3 years, but when we signed the contract, we knew it was going to be up for several years, so I don't see it as a short-term thing. It's possible that it will be extended until 2015, which is actually another 6 years. I'm hoping that doesn't happen, and so it will be just for another 3 years. But regardless, we know there's that money. We depend on it, and I just assume leave it where it is.
Noah?
I'm more in agreement with Rick. I think this is giving us a clear shot of what we have to work with. It's not only us looking at this budget, it's potentially citizens, and this gives us the realistic idea and I think helps promote further action to address the challenges that we have. If we continue to keep it as it is, the inclination will be there to assume that money will always be there. And I think this just gives us a much more realistic look at what our budget will be in the future.
Cora?
I think you're just going to move it from one account to another. It's money in, money out. It's if you move it to the other account, you're still going to move it back in to cover everything this year. We won't be able to cover the budget if we don't put it back in. So it's just a bookkeeping technicality, and so I'm not real sure I see the relevancy. I get the relevancy of doing it, but it's in and out.
Well, I guess I figure we've had a really nice ride on this money, and hopefully the ride will last a few years longer. But if I do understand the idea of, okay, what is our actual revenue that we can count on, because we're looking at revenue increasing measures, and if that simplifies looking at that in our finance director's mind, then that's fine with me. It is a matter of
accumulation fund.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, that was Carla and Betty opposed. Okay, thank you. And next, item D6. Here we go again on money. This is a discussion on revenue ballot measures, including a public utilities user tax, transient occupancy tax, and 9/11 tax. Rob.
Good evening again. At your December 8, 2008 City Council meeting, Councilmember Grantham requested a future agenda item concerning potential new revenue sources. The City Council supported his request and specifically mentioned as potential new revenue sources a public utility user tax, a transient occupancy tax, and a 911 tax. The primary purpose of the Councilmember Grantham's future agenda item request was in response to the management partner's report done in April 2008. That report states that the city is in an extremely difficult financial situation. Expenses have risen and have been outpaced by revenues. The city has already taken extreme measures in the form of belt tightening to the point that the city services are being starved. The level of financial support for public safety in particular has been trimmed so low that the city is at the point of providing inadequate services. Attached to your staff report are various graphs from the management partners report on future projection of revenues and expenditures, such as general fund revenues and expenditures, projected general fund revenue and expenditures, assuming the status quo operations, and keeping pace with inflation, and various other graphs. In face of the difficult financial times ahead, and in response to the management partners report, the staff and council took further steps necessary last year to retain the balanced budget and end the fiscal year in the black. However, it is very important to realize that the status quo is not an option, and that is according to the management partners report. In the management partners report, there were various recommendations, and those recommendations are outlined also in your staff report. Their recommendations were to consider implementing a utility user's tax, which basically, pursuant to the government code, authorizes cities to collect a utility user's tax on either or and electricity, gas, cable, television, water, and telephone services. The management partners report also recommended considering increasing your city's transient occupancy tax. And gave the estimate of approximately $187,000 for every 1% that you increase bail, whether they would be, for example, for the utility user tax, that whether they'd be for gas, whether they'd be for electric, or whether they'd be 1%, whether they'd be 2%, whether there'd be a low-income subsidy, whether there would be a cap on that. Those are all complicated issues that need much more time than this evening. And also goes for 911 user tax. You know, what's the fee? Is there supplements for low income and for other issues that have to be brought up? My main concern with this issue is that it is brought up in the management partners report over and over and over, and that in order to implement any of these tax measures takes a great amount of staff time. And what I do not want to see occur is in June of this year for you to say, staff, go implement something and put it on the November ballot. Because I'm going to look at you and say, I don't have the time to be able to do that and do one that's legally binding and has a rate of success of being able to be passed. Or maybe not in June, but at the end of this year, saying, start preparing one for the June election in 2010. We need the foresight to say now to begin these type of analysis, and it's almost a goal setting. It might be at the final time that these ordinances are prepared, but they're not the proper time to bring them forward because the community wouldn't accept them. But at least in my mind, you'll have the ordinances prepared. You'll be able to see them. You'll go through the process and understand them and know how to implement them. And so my recommendation is to start working on the utility user tax now. And like I said, maybe you won't. Maybe it will be an exercise in futility that we go through this. We do a couple workshops. We have an ordinance, and it's never put on the ballot. But I'd rather be prepared than coming to me at the end of the year and saying we need something by next June, and I just have to tell you there isn't enough time to do it. And that's kind of what we ran into last year with it. We didn't have the time. So I'm not so much want to get into the dynamics of, what each ordinance would say. I think we'd have to go through that process and develop that, and maybe we do need to have a CIPA subcommittee. Obviously, a TOT is pretty simple. I mean, that's like the sales tax. That doesn't take a whole lot of time. But a utility user's tax and all the complications to that, and a 911 tax, and I call that a 911 tax because it is now. The courts have held that you can't have a 911 fee. The council on its own cannot establish that. Union City lost in a recent case, and Ventura has now changed theirs. So there is no longer a 911 user fee. It has to be a tax. And all that means is instead of the council
to... And you mentioned a subcommittee. Are we going to have workshops to decide what items people would be willing to have taxed to get preferences? Or are you going to have a subcommittee do surveys? Or what do you foresee as the process?
I would see the process being a workshop type, somewhat like the mobile home rent control ordinance, in that maybe not have a subcommittee, but have a ordinance that would be available, a draft of that, with all the different criteria, maybe coming back first to you to get some direction on exactly what percentages you were thinking of first before going to that workshop, and then going to the workshop and seeing what type of buy-in, and then, you know, then I think you do have to do a survey at one point in time. It's just, you know, what we do on cost-wise, trying to do it ourselves as opposed to using an outside consultant firm, you know, knowing that costs are something that we're very conscious about. So it's kind of a fluid process. I just need to know if we're going to be doing this in the November election. Even if we don't, I think it's something that's stated in the management report to do, and so I think we need to flush it out. And like I said, the end goal might be that we don't do them, but until we start having workshops and having these discussions, we won't know what the end game is.
Okay. Questions? Okay, comments? Okay, Rick.
Well, thank you for the graft. This looks like the stock market, or it looks like a guy falling out of an airplane without a parachute on. But it's scary. I think that any reasonable person that can add, subtract numbers has to see what the effects would be if we don't do anything, if we sit around and play our fiddle while Morro Bay burns, so to speak. You can forget about the second fire station ever opening, because that's not going to happen unless we have increased revenue. Probably the biggest disappointment personally that I had serving on the council in my first 2 years was when we brought this up last year, and it was defeated on a 3-2 vote. But I'm well aware of what my responsibility is, and this is something that needs to be acted on now. Compare it against. See what kind of a deal that they want to offer and put it up against what we feel where the TOT should go and what amount to BID and what amount to the city, but at least it gives us a comparison. So, this is a real exercise in democracy by, you know, we're not dictating anything. We're trying to work to the point to get the factual information out, to give the citizens a chance to say, okay, do I... The same thing they did so much with Measure Q. They saw where the money was going to be allocated for. They saw a real need for it, and they passed it. And that's been very helpful, getting our fire station to the point where it is and helping the police get additional vehicles, which were sorely needed. So these funds would not be earmarked for any particular thing, but would go toward the general fund to pay for the salary increases that we have to give people, and for our yearly budget expense. So I'm all for this. I don't think that's any secret. I'm all for drafting up these preparatory documents. And further stated, I'm all for getting them on the ballot and getting them passed to get this city some revenue.
I'm willing to look at the TOT tax, and I'm willing to wait, as the people requested this in public comment tonight, that we wait until we hear back from the bid and see how those fits together before asking the city attorney to start working on something. I'd like to see what they have to say. I don't know if he would rather write up something so we have a comparison or if that's what we want, but that's the one out of the three that I'm willing to look at right now. We just raised sewer rates by 50%. We just put in a new sales tax. I think that's why we voted not to go with one of these on the ballot this last November, because we have just taxed our people 2 years in a row. And whether they'll remember that in 2 years from now is another question. I guess that's the end of my comment.
Noah?
Well, I'm actually in agreement with Betty in this area because of the things that you cited, the increase in costs across the board. Thinking about this, I think that shows that there's a really high sensitivity to new taxes, and I would suggest that if we're to consider this, we really need to make sure that we have a focused use for these, and that the residents and our community feels like they're comfortable with what where we're going to be spending this money. We need to be really clear about where that money would be focused. At the same time, I think we need to make sure that we're continuing on aggressively addressing the expense side of the city's budget, and I would suggest that that is the area for us to continue our focus for now, because from the perspective that I see, I think our community is really feeling strongly that there's still things that can be done internally as far as expenses go. So at this point, I certainly with the TOT would want to wait for the discussion at the BID at the next meeting to consider that, and I would have strong hesitations to consider signing up or even drafting a utility tax or a 911 tax.
Carla?
Well, I think I'm going to have to agree with the other two council members about the utility tax and the 911 tax right now. I'd like to see us continue down the path that the management partners has given us as far as looking at some of the other options that we have not yet explored in consolidation and cutbacks and merging of things. And as much as this was something they presented to us, it was certainly way down the list of things that were options, and I would hope that it's one of the last things we have to look at. I would like to think if it is a direction we have to go to, that we would not do it in a special election. That would cost us more. I think we'd have a harder time getting voter turnout and support for something like that in a 2009 special election, and it would require a higher percentage vote. I certainly support waiting till the opportunities for the BID information is provided to us, and would consider certainly supporting TOT and hope that we could line up with the county so that we would be in sync with where the county TOT would be at, and maybe a BID so that we would be across the board somewhere with that, and encourage people still to be participating in Morro Bay as a destination spot. So that's all for right now.
We have to help ourselves, and they've been willing to make that sacrifice. The point that I see here is that if we don't do something now and get this started, it's going to be too late, and we're not going to be able to change our mind after we've done all, and I agree, we need to do everything else on that management partners list that we possibly can do, and we need to do it with all haste, because otherwise we're in real big trouble. I mean, we're already in trouble. We're going to be in more trouble. But I think that to not start the ball rolling, and as was said by Rob, you know, even if we don't do anything with it, get it done, get it ready, because if it comes time where we realize by June or November of this year that, hey, we're not going to make it without something else, then we're going to be able to say that to our citizens, you know, we've got to do this. It doesn't have to be on everything. It can just be on some of our utilities. It can be, I think the TOT is certainly worth exploring. We don't know what's going to happen with the county bid. We don't know what's going to happen with the local bid. And I'm not saying that this should preclude it, but let's be ready. If they can't get their act together, or if what we feel is not sufficient as far as their organization or what the city would get from it, then we're ready to go with our own measure on the TOT, which we know is easy to pass. I think they said like 75% of those passed. And I'm not saying don't do the BID. I'm certainly interested in looking at that. But we need to have every single possibility available to us. And I think to go ahead and start this process, even if we don't end up doing it, if we don't start it, we have no chance. We have no choice when it comes down to the line. If we do start it, at least we have the option, and we can get the I mean, it's only going to happen if the community votes for it. We're not going to make that decision. They've got to make it, but at least we'll be able to present it to them to make. And if we don't, I agree with Rick, we're being irresponsible to not be ready for that possibility.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
We just got out of an election. We have another general election in 2 years. I would agree that we need to wait till a general election. It's cheaper. It's more of a better turnout. We don't have to make this decision tonight. We have 12 months to make this decision. and Mr. Schultz would like to do it ahead of time, that's fine. I'd be glad to have him think about doing that. But I'm not ready to talk about that. And if we wait until the end of this fall season, 9 months from now, he still has a year or
no,
8 months.
No, he doesn't. We have a primary.
I'm not talking about the primary. I'm talking about the fall general election in 2010. Okay, that's what I'm focusing on. And so if we start the BID, the TOT, it seems to me that's where we all agree that that's a good place to start and we should start that process. But you start talking all three of these at the same time, you're making the community nervous. You're pulling on my pocketbook. You're pulling on my pocketbook. It's not okay. You can't just do it from what the city needs, but you have to, I think, have a sense of what we've already done in the community and kind of, you know, do a little bit at a time and not just hit them. You're going to go with the TOT. What kind of compromise are we going to make with the business district? And that in itself is going to be a chore. So let's get that worked out and see how that's going to help or not help or whatever.
A lot of the things that's still left on the management partners report are things that are going to take a lot of time and probably less time than this would when we really need the money. I would like to get an opinion from our expert, our chief financial officer, to have her give us an opinion on this and what would the repercussions be if we don't.
Susan? You want to be on the hot seat?
Oh, why not? I don't get on the hot seat very often. Until we really go through mid-year, I can't tell you with any certainty where we are right now. We are still putting in some journal entries, got a few things we have to clean up. And so probably Wednesday or Thursday, I'll be able to look at the financials and take a look and see where we really are at the mid-year picture and be able to come back to you at the next council meeting and say, well, we're not doing well, but not as bad, or, oh my gosh. I really honestly don't know where we are. One of our plans for this new year is to do a zero-based budget, and that's one of the ways that we think we will be able to work on paring down our expenditures and at least be able to identify what exactly we're spending things on. But I have to agree that it's important to at least get these things in place, because if we don't do them and suddenly we decide we want to, we may be too late. And we know that revenues are falling. The predictions from all of the economists are that things are going to be not very good in 2009, a little bit worse in 2010, 11's going to be flat, and 12, you're going to start seeing things coming up just about the time we're going to be losing that $500,000 from Dynegy. We need to do something. We need to get them in place so that we can move forward with whatever revenue enhancement measures we choose to go with, but at least get the things prepared so that we can do it. And, you know, at least we're there. Maybe we don't do them all. Maybe it can generate anywhere from $150,000 up to almost $1 million. But you can do it based on electric and gas only. You can say electric, gas, and water. You don't have to move into telephone, which can be a little volatile. You can set it at 1, 2, and 3%, 4, 5. You could set it at 5 and say we're going to implement it at 3 and give your citizens, you're in at 5, but, hey, we're going to cut back and we're going to go to 3 for the next 2 years. TOT, currently with the information that I've seen from the BID, I don't know where we fit in there. And as Councilmember Wynn-Holtz again stated, that's a negotiation process there. But if we don't have, if we're not prepared to go forward with any of these measures, we may choose to do none of them, but at least we've got them and we can do it.
I'm going to piggyback on that. I think it's very important that the council realize that we've been addressing the expenditure side since 2005.
We've gone through a number of years where we've cut budget and cut budget and cut budget. In 2005, we started this where some cities today are starting what we started in 2005. Mm-hmm. So we're way, I guess you could say we're way in front of them in those measures. Are there places that we can still cut? I think a fair answer to that is yes. Are those significant amounts of money? I think a fair answer to that is probably not. Yes, we can do some consolidation, probably. Yes, we can probably streamline some, but we are very close to being there. And I think that if we, Council Member Winholtz made a very good comment about the community being nervous, but I think you have a community nervous about the potential loss of their services. And if it's, is it recreation and parks? Is it police officers? Is it firefighters? Is it our street workers? It could be any of those people. But I think that's something to make the community nervous, too. If what we're asking you tonight is to allow us to take the time we need to take to prepare these things so you have a fair understanding and the community has a fair understanding of what they're about. If we wait a year or 9 months, it doesn't allow staff to do it properly. And we don't want to go through not prepared. So we're asking you tonight to give us the time to prepare these items.
June of 2012 for a tax measure. 2010, you have your window period right now. Your June election is your general election. That is where you need to put it on there because it's called a general election in our municipal code because, in fact, if someone got over 50%, there would be no November election. So it's a switch in that, our June election is now our general election. Read the code section, Council Member Winholtz.
I'm just laughing because who in this town has ever gotten 50%?
But it is called read the code section that was passed by the vote of the people. It is our general election, but it is in June. So, you certainly can, and you've got a little bit of a window, but if the process doesn't start, because if you look at all the cities that have done it, it's actually more than a two-year process by the time you say, let's look at this, to the time you put it on the ballot. So you would be saying, and to come to me at the end of the year, or the fall, and say you want something in 2010, I'm going to say, sure, we can do that. We'll need to hire outside consultants and outside help to help us because we don't have the staff time to do that. So,
I would add to that, remember on Measure Q, we campaigned that for a full year before the election. And to not start the preparation now for something like that, you're not going to make it.
So therefore, you're assuming you're going to put it on the ballot, and this is what I'm objecting to.
No, we're saying that we have to be able to put it on the ballot if at that time our community seems to want it. And that's what we did with Measure Q. We went out, we did workshops, we did interviews, we did surveys, and we found that there was support for that. We're going to do the same thing with this, but we have to start now. We can't start 6 weeks before the election. We have to start now. We have to educate the public. That was the major reason that Measure Q passed. We educated the public as to why it was so necessary. And it took a year to do that. It'll probably take less time now, I agree, because I think everybody's aware of the situation a little bit more. But we have to give them options. We have to find out what would they be willing to accept, if anything. And we have to have the time to do that. To tie our hands and make it a decision that has to be made without the proper education, we're bound to lose and we're wasting money.
Now, Rob, in your opinion, if we waited till February to have this discussion?
You've got a six-month window period for the 2010 election, but I wouldn't give it more than that, and I certainly would. The other comment was is if you don't move forward with it, I won't pick it up. I won't start looking at all the ordinances that did pass, that didn't pass. This challenges for some ordinances and what the public would accept and not accept as to those amounts to even give it a fighting chance is what I have concerns about because I can see that process being very drawn out if that's the ordinance you wanted to go with. So, it's a moving target, and yes, it's another month would not matter one way or the other on these, but like I said, this is internally for staff to take another step in starting to develop some of these ideas that were recommendations for manager partners, which basically we wouldn't do until it's brought up again as a future agenda item.
Can I make a motion?
Before I do, I'd just like to make another comment and reiterate the fact that We're not dictating anything. We're giving the voters an opportunity to tell us what they want. And if they vote no, if it goes to a ballot and they vote no, then I can accept that. But I can't accept making changes and cuts in public safety without giving them the chance to tell us how they feel about it. So that in mind, I would like to make a motion to direct staff to begin preparing a draft emergency communication or tax ordinance, utility tax ordinance, and a transient occupancy tax ordinance, and to bring back the draft ordinance for consideration at a city workshop.
Could we vote on those one at a time?
I know, because I would prefer to have our options. If we do it one at a time, no. I don't think that's the thing to do.
I'll second the motion. Discussion?
I'm inclined to wait till after the mid-year budget review.
Okay. All in favor? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I look at these graphs and waiting is the last thing.
I said I'm looking at these graphs and waiting is the last thing I want to do. I don't think we can afford to wait.
According to Rob, we would still have time to develop any of these if we talk about this in February, and we'd still be able to make it under the next election.
How is the situation going to improve between now and February? The situation, if anything, is probably going to be more dire.
And that'll give us a better picture of what we're dealing with.
My picture is crystal clear now.
Well, that's yours.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I want to add to the motion, but I don't think it's proper to then mix it to ask to come back at the mid-year budget, but maybe it's understood that this can come back at mid-year budget.
Why don't you go ahead with that one motion, and then we'll talk about the second one. Okay. Do I hear a second on that?
Second.
One? Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Now, second one.
I think it will probably grow out of the mid-year budget, so I'm not sure that a motion is needed right now.
Okay, so if we wanted to bring this back, would we have to go to future agenda item again, or?
Yeah, you're not giving me a specific time to bring it back, so unless someone set it as a future agenda item, that's when it would be put.
Could we just continue it? Or because it was voted down, we can't?
If someone could make a motion now to continue it to a certain date.
Okay. I'll move that we continue the discussion of the 9/11 tax and the utilities tax to a date uncertain. Or do you want to?
A date certain. I mean, if you just want a month, do you want it right after the mid-year in March, or do you want it April, June? I mean, give me a date you specific.
How about 2 months? Sometime within the next 2 months. Is that specific enough?
As long as we are giving you, in your opinion, the time that you would need to develop and draft a potential ordinance.
Okay, do I have a second on that motion?
Second that.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. All right, so we're still got it on the file. And future agenda items. Anybody?
I would like to follow up on the discussion about the development of a green building / low impact development incentive program with a potential tiered fee process, permit process.
I go along with that.
That's a second. Okay. Just clarification, what do you want to see? What we do when we future agenda is something we say whether we're going to do the report or whether staff has to do the report, and what is it you would be looking for there? Is it staff time? Is it?
Yes. In my discussions with Mr. Ambo, he felt like that was a good idea that could be implemented with existing knowledge within the department, and my read from him was that they would be willing to work on that concept.
Okay. That might be fulfilled with our own transport systems and budgeting come in from the other areas to make the routes a little bit more productive within those communities.
Are you talking outside of the RTA and only within our Dial-A-Ride system?
No, RTA might be included too. It's a regional idea to see how we could combine them to allow transfers and trips to be easier to accomplish.
Could we ask RTA to look at that instead of us?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So maybe you could just carry that to the RTA or to the Florida?
Yeah.
Okay. So then does it really need to be agendized?
Well, I want to agendize it for discussion for us. Whatever they bring back, whatever they suggest, I want to be able to bring to the council.
Oh, sure, but will you get the information that quickly?
Sure. Well, I'll get it soon. I don't know how soon, but I would like to be on the agenda list.
Well, I'd support that.
Okay. All right. So I will investigate that one. Okay.
So we had two people support, just two supports on that?
Noah, and myself.
Yeah. Janice, I had something too.
Okay.
I'd like to see. I'm interested in seeing what the opportunities would be to look at addressing the mayoral term from 2 years to 4 years, since our primary looks like it may be around for a while. I'm concerned about how the second year of the term. And I can speak to it since I wasn't running for mayor and don't intend to, but that it changes the second year of the term, since you have to pull papers in March and then spend the next 8 months campaigning. I felt that it was very obvious that it takes away from a lot of the time availability for the mayoral position to actually function. And so I'm interested to see how some of the other council members feel about exploring that. What it would take to look at bringing that forward to the community to address that to a four-year term.
Okay.
Yes, Betty.
I'd rather look at getting rid of the ordinance than changing the mayoral term.
You know what you have to do that.
Well, I think it's probably going to happen.
Well, I think it's worth discussing, certainly. It is difficult. I think it's worth having the discussion anyway, so I would go along with that.
And potentially broaden it to discussion of the ordinance itself.
All right, now I'd like to separate. Well, I'd like to keep them separate. I'm willing to interview
a
council
person,
whomever.
It takes a year of their term to campaign.
Yeah. Should somebody choose to run,
right,
you know, for re-election. I'm just looking to see if there's anyone interested in
supporting. I think it's worth discussing, definitely. Okay, so we have just, and I think that'll just be a discussion. I don't think we need a staff report on that.
Well, I mean, we've got one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I would want to look to see what the ordinances are and things on it.
That ordinance, and it was passed by the vote of the people, so it would have to go back to the vote of the people, which would be a measure, which would be at a general election. So we can bring it back for discussion and see if that's what something you'd want to work on.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
I need to ask the attorney something. A couple of our committee appointments need to be redone. Do I need to agendize
that? No. Okay. It's on there, but I made a note to make sure it gets on there for tomorrow, and it'll be on your next meeting.
All right. Anything else? Betty, you have a closing quote.
I do. We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us. When we see land as community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect. Aldo Leopold.
Okay. And with that, we are adjourned.